Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, November 14, 2024. This is your award-winning Give Our Nation Media Assassination, episode 1712.
This is No Agenda.
Putting post-its on the good gear and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region Number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I'm still working on it, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Working on your opening or just working on it?
I had a convoluted, I think it was just a bit too long and I just couldn't pull it off.
I'm sorry.
Hey, I'll tell you what it is.
Oh, okay. Here we go. We get a post opening joke.
Yeah. So I've been working on some
new
on
material. Spice new material.
I've been working on a spice mix. This is a commercial product. Mm-hmm. A spice mix that brings out the flavors, brings forward the flavors of meat and vegetables. Mm-hmm. And I'm calling it the seasoning of reveal.
You can ridicule me all you want, but until you can show me where the 15 million Democrat voters went, I think we have a season of reveal. That is your season of reveal right there. 15 million people are dead.
They disappeared.
They just disappeared. Hey, good news. This is it. Get your post-it notes ready. Starting December 2nd. We can bid on production equipment, gym, offices, and vehicles from InfoWars.
Yeah, I heard this.
Kind of sad.
Yeah, well, maybe Elon will just buy it all up and give it back to him.
Well, this auction, by the way, does not include the intellectual property, which has already been purchased.
And we have breaking news that just came in four minutes ago from the Associated Press. Remember, we told you how Alex Jones's InfoWars site was going up for auction yesterday in order to pay the $1.5 billion he owes Sandy Hook families for claiming that shooting was a hoax. I'm leading up to this because we now found out who bought InfoWars. It is the satirical news outlet, The Onion. They bought it at a bankruptcy auction. Again, that's according to the relatives of Sandy Hook victims who spoke to the Associated Press. That's all we know at this point. We don't know how much The Onion bought InfoWars for, or if there were any other terms or anything else with the deal that we know of. Forgive me, I'm thinking of the word. Any other codicils to that contract. The sale price, again, was not immediately disclosed. But again, the satirical news outlet The Onion has bought Alex Jones InfoWars site.
Okay, a couple of things.
I would have bought InfoWars.com. I didn't know it was available.
Onion, they even exist anymore?
Well, they're trying to exist. They're trying to combat the Babylon Bee with a little bit of news.
Well, I have real news if we're going to do breaking news, and this is something that we might as well get out of the way.
And now, back to real news.
Real news!
This is not real news in that regard. This is the six-week cycle. I have it. The FBI. This just came out.
It's breaking.
Breaking this hour.
I'm sorry. Breaking this hour.
Breaking this hour. FBI Houston has arrested a man accused of attempting to provide material support for the terror group ISIS. The agency is telling us, and we learned this about 5 minutes ago, but we are scooping up more information now. Uh-huh. The agency is now telling us that the 28-year-old suspect admitted to planning a terrorist attack on U.S. soil.
No.
That's all that we know right now. We know that details are coming out. We'll continue to do our due diligence as journalists and ask great questions.
Did you hear that?
Hey, how do you do journalism? We will continue at this hour, breaking this hour, to ask great questions.
Continue to do our due diligence as journalists and ask great questions.
Oh, that's it. All right.
I want to share with you now the FBI statement.
Please.
A quote. FBI Houston Special Agent in Charge Douglas Williams announces the arrest of 28-year-old Anas Saeed. He is accused of attempting to provide material support to ISIS and, by his own admission, planning a terrorist attack on U.S. soil, all from his apartment in far west Houston.
Oh, no!
The suspect has admitted to researching how to conduct an attack on local military recruiting centers.
Google search.
Offering his home as safe sanctuary to ISIS operatives.
Whoa.
Bragging he would commit a 9/11 style attack if He had the resources.
A plane.
Attempting to produce ISIS propaganda. More as we get it on the story.
Be afraid. Be afraid. Everybody be very afraid because they're here. Wow!
ISIS. We will follow them to the gates of hell. ISIS. I feel good.
Dynamite. Wow. He researched and he told the FBI, you know, if I can get a plane, 9/11 style attack. What nonsense is this? They're trying to get some extra bonus money before time runs out.
Unbelievable.
Before the, you know, Trump is doing a real typical business reorg thing with the FBI. He builds a new building, and then it's like, okay, here's the new building. You guys in this old building, you're not going over. It's like that's what you do it's a perfect business turnaround.
I never thought about it in that regard, but it's exactly right.
This is a classic
business turnaround, a pivot.
Yeah, 10 guys you can go over. And by the way, we've wired it the way we want it wired now. So we can hear everything we need to hear. Here's your new building. So obvious. These guys are disgusting. Some schmuck. They probably wait until we see the indictment. We'll get the report. Like, well, you know, we were talking to him for a couple of months, told him to do some Google searches. He said, if only I could get an airplane, a 757, you know, I could probably crash it into a building. Oh God. Let it end.
I just found it interesting because I didn't do the math on it because it just came out this morning, but I figure 6 weeks ago there was whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What was the last six-week cycle? I probably have it. Hold on a second. Six-week cycle. Was that September 30th. Is that 6 weeks? Holy crap. It's exactly 6 weeks.
It's always exactly 6 weeks. That's the joke.
6 weeks ago.
He first caught the attention of the FBI because of jihadist-oriented messages he posted on social media.
Same guy. Same guy. It's unbelievable. We're on to you, FBI. We're on to you.
And nobody else cares.
You know, I was just... There's a lot of different things to discuss. Of course, the appointments. I think what is most interesting is the total befuddlement, and in a way, looking at the ratings, that is a big story, of course. The collapse of the mainstream media, at least the cable news, let's put it that way. And I just wrote some stuff down.
Well, you should tell people, I don't think everyone knows this. You should give them some background on the collapse of these shows.
Okay. CNN will be axing top stars in layoffs that will see hundreds fired as ratings continue to tank. Headline. My favorite. CNN host Chris Wallace leaving network after 3 years to explore possible full-time podcasting career. Right. Get out before you get fired. Comcast to put MSNBC and Oprah's Oxygen networks up for sale in cable sell-off as they force them to reimagine their news operations. MSNBC ratings. Morning Joe down 39.6. That's the first hour. Second hour, 36.9%. Andrea Mitchell. The Mitchell Report, 39.7% down. Ari Melber. Did anyone ever watch him in the first place? Down almost 50%. Joy Reid down 54.6. All In with Chris Hayes down 47. I mean, it's a bloodbath. And with the cord cutting going on, it's just not happening. There's, you know, the carriage fees are going away, and these, you know, highly paid stars. Anderson Pooper makes $20 million reportedly. Aaron Burnett makes $6 million reportedly, and the Caitlyn woman makes $3 million a year. She's new. How did she get into that gig? I want her agent. That's really good. So I just wrote down a couple of things because why are they befuddled? Well,
they're befuddled. What? How could this happen?
Let's just look at a second what what the establishment, including the mainstream legacy MSM5M media. We had the lawfare, the SCOTUS insurrection, booking Trump, the huge fines, Department of Justice attacks, the home raid. We had celebrity endorsements everywhere. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how Joy Reid still can't believe it.
I think it's important to say that, you know, anyone who has experienced or been in the United States for any period of time and experienced this country's history and knows it cannot have believed that it would be easy to elect a woman president, let alone a woman of color. Oh, yeah. Let's just be clear. Nothing that was true yesterday about how flawlessly this campaign was run is not true now. I mean, this really was an historic, flawlessly run campaign. She had Queen Latifah never endorsed anyone. She came out and endorsed.
Queen Latifah. You
know, I mean, she had every prominent celebrity voice. She had the Taylor Swifties, she had the Beehive. Like, you could not have run a better campaign in that short period of time. And I think that's still true.
I mean, it's unbelievable. She had the Swifties. She had the Beehive. She had, I mean, Queen Latifah never endorses anybody. Okay, so we had the celebrity endorsements. Let's remember the algo and search manipulation, the autocomplete on Google search, all of that was manipulated. Multiple assassination attempts. And then the media came out with, he incited an insurrection, he's racist, he's a rapist, he's mentally ill, he favors only the
misogynist,
rich.
Misogynist, don't forget
misogynist,
that.
Misogynist, thank you. He'll take away your rights, he's going to be a dictator, he's going to rip up the Constitution. We'll use the military against the American people, hates gays, trans, women, and theys. Project 2025, Hitler. We can't believe that the guy won! What is wrong with the American people?
Actually, to be honest about it, with that laundry list, I'm surprised he won myself, let alone swept.
It's just unbelievable.
It does tell you something. It tells you that the media has lost its mojo.
Even if you listen to Charlemagne the God, the voice of Black America, Charlemagne the God, who is also he's just befuddled by the demographics of it.
What do you make of the demographics here? I mean, yeah. Trump got one out of every three voters of color.
No.
Yeah. Yes.
One out of
35%.
What?
Really?
What? Yeah.
When you say color, you mean like black, brown,
you mean like common people?
Oh, well, I think that, you know, people have different issues that they care about. And I think that there's nobody out there that's a single issue voter. I think some of this is a backlash to race and gender and identity politics.
No,
but man, most people,
really?
They just care about keeping food on their table,
yes,
and keeping a roof over their head. And I think sometimes people forget about that. I think that they forget about, you know, the working class. And for whatever reason, Donald Trump speaks to the grievances of the
reason.
Working class in a real way. And I keep telling folks, people will forget what you did, they'll forget what you said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. And when you go back to 2020, even though it was a pandemic and it was COVID,
yeah,
people don't care. All they know is they got stimulus checks with his name on it, and that's what they remember.
Oh, that did
and so
it.
People
okay.
think about right. that. When you have conversations with folks, they'd be like, yo, I remember how 2020 felt. And they think that they're going to feel that, you know, in this next term.
People were burning the envelopes. You remember that? When the check
I don't
came
remember
in.
That, actually.
Oh, yeah, when the checks came in with Trump's signature on it. They didn't burn the checks, mind you.
Just the envelopes.
Just the envelopes. Ah.
I don't know where you're going with this, but I do have some clips on demographics that
yeah,
I have
yeah,
to.
Sure, sure.
The NPR was freaked out about the same exact topic.
They're befuddled.
And they're befuddled.
This
and so they brought,
the
this, they brought these clips are not, this is, I got five clips, but they're not like, they don't flow from clip to clip. They're each pretty standalone. And interesting, the is one of those specials they do on
they
NPR
do for themselves,
and they have,
in their
they
echo in, in their echo chamber. It's a special
the
they do
and
for
they brought
themselves.
In three Democrat strategists, including mm-hmm. Paul Beglia, who seemed to be the odd man out because he was the old guy, and the other two people were just younger. One was black, and one was just some gay guy. And they were pushing their agendas,
just
and they
gay
couldn't
guy.
Figure it, a gay guy,
the gay guy,
rando,
couldn't rando gay guy, couldn't figure it out. Why other gay guys voted for Trump?
They are trying to discuss how this came about, and none of them got, except, and Paul Begley kind of loses it at the end, which will be the last clip. But they, you can hear within the discussion what the problem really is, and the fact that they're going to die on a hill, and it's going to be, you'll hear what it is quickly. This is Demographics Befuddlement, NPR, be the first clip.
Let me ask, for as long as I've been covering politics, 20 years or so, Democrats have preached demographics is destiny, believing that as the country gets less white, it will move left. This election showed that to be false. So what replaces that as the new paradigm, the vision of where the party goes from here? So, Adrian Paul, what's the new paradigm?
Yeah, I mean, I this idea that demographics is destiny, I think, was never real. I think that the challenge for us right now, I think I agree with Waleed about the sort of vacuum that has been left in communities in terms of that vacuum being filled with misinformation, disinformation, outright lies, and propaganda. You know, when we think about what is the new paradigm, when you have real conversations with people and not just sort of gloss over and have knee-jerk reactions, I think that we're sort of seeing right now in the postmortem that's happening about, you know, have we gone too far? Did we go too far left? I think the Democrats need to decide what they are fighting for, and they need to fight for those things.
I want you to jump in, Paul.
She really didn't say much there.
No, and all she, her comments the whole time is we have to have a conversation. We have to have a conversation.
A meeting. We need a meeting.
So she's the meeting conversation. And then she says this, that, by the way, that when I was, even when I was a Democrat, the idea that demographics are, is the future, because once we get rid of these damn whiteys, we're going to be, you know, taking over the place.
It'll be great.
And so that, so he, this guy who's hosting this is quite reasonable, but nobody else is. And it's quite funny. So we're getting, this one is now the, it's got the at sign instead of a two, but it's the wow clip.
I think that Democrats need a both and approach around delivering real economic results to working class Americans and not shying away from real societal changes that are happening around us that we can't just pivot away from. We need to humanize trans Americans. We need to contextualize trans Americans. We need to do the same thing that we did in the struggle for gay rights, which is fight these battles and persuade not just in election season, but in the years before election season. And I think we lost to the oldest playbook in human history, which is divide and conquer. And one place I would push back on Paul is that Democrats also need, We're too conflict averse. We're trying to be everyone, everything to everyone. Oh, we need to create villains. You know, part of the thing is that Democrats have gotten too close to the boardrooms of Uber and Facebook and Wall Street. Some of the grocery companies. And we need to take on those villains. Otherwise, the Republicans will create and manufacture villains every single time.
So the corporations that clothe and feed us are villains.
Yes.
And we have to support the trans. Now, this is interesting to me.
Gay rights, whatever that is, gay rights.
The way we did gay rights now has to be moved to trans.
Trans rights, yes. We have to contextualize
them. So the trans Maoist agenda is, I've determined that's the hill they're going to die on.
Wow. They need to contextualize trans, is what he said.
Yeah.
They're trans.
They're going to, the Democrat Party is going to die on the trans Maoist hill. And I've heard it, and I believe me, I listen to a lot of NPR and PBS, a lesser extent on PBS, but they're all in on the, here's what we did wrong. Well, there's this, that, and the other. It was misogyny. There wasn't good communication. There was a bunch of racism. And if we just
focus
double
on
down
trans.
On trans. it's absolutely incredible to me. But let's go to the third clip, which is the racism clip. This is the other complaint.
The last time Democrats were in the wilderness for 12 years, Ronald Reagan for 8 years, followed by George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton got back into power by saying, it's the economy, stupid. We're going to tack to the center. Is the same answer going to work for Democrats 4 years from now, 2 years from now?
No.
We got a no, a yes, and Adrian?
No. I don't think that we're in a fundamentally different world than we were then. Again, I would say to
Wally's point,
like
stop the clip. This is that woman again. She says we're in a fundamental. Now, you have to remember her own words. This is another problem that they have. There's the fundamentally different world is the trans world. But she's kind of carries it to racism. Now, if we're in a fundamentally different world, listen to her final conclusion when she wraps. Okay,
I don't think that we're in a fundamentally different world than we were then. Again, I would say to Waleed's point, like the country has changed, right? Not just in terms of its complexion. And we have to address the issues that are fundamentally dividing Americans. And that is not just the economy. You know, we can't, as a country, we are incapable, unable, unwilling to address the sort of central issues that have created our inability to get to a more perfect union. And that is absolutely racism. The Democratic Party absolutely cannot run away from that. And I know that for myself and my community, we've been dealing with this for a very long time.
Oh, wait a minute. Is she Black? Does she represent her community, the Black community?
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
She, did you hear that little phrase at the end, what she said?
What did she say?
Play it again.
Play the end here.
The Democratic Party absolutely cannot run away from that. And I know that for myself and my community, we've been dealing with this for a very long time.
We've been dealing with this.
Wait a minute. She just said it's fundamentally changed. Her whole comment with it's fundamentally changed, but then it falls back to we've racism. Been dealing this with for a very long time.
So she's probably a consultant.
They're all consultants.
Yeah, so they all come in with their own consulting bent, and it's like, I'm Black. I'm a consultant for racism for the Democrats. I'm gay. I'm a consultant for trans which, by the way, is almost an oxymoron because they are not in the same community, certainly not gay men and trans. This is dumb. These people are stupid.
Well, let's go to clip four.
Things. I think what I'm frustrated with is there's been all this talk this past week about how Democrats need to abandon the woke part of their party, and very little talk about abandoning the billionaires who are part of their party, who are harming our ability to speak in terms of class warriors and not just cultural warriors. And
I don't know. The Republicans had Elon Musk, and they managed to do it.
But they are running. A campaign based on, like, again, the oldest playbook, which is Elon Musk is somehow a victim of American democracy rather than a success story of how the economy and democracy works for people like him. And so I feel so ashamed that the Democrats were unprepared for the onslaught of what was going to be attacks on the lines of migration, the border, transgender Americans, when we knew this was coming years ago, and yet we didn't develop a strategy to explain to the American people what this was designed to do, which was to help elect Republicans and people like Elon Musk and get them more power.
Oh my goodness.
Now, the interesting new term that was introduced here, besides electing Elon Musk for something, I don't know what he's talking about there, transgender Americans.
Yeah, I heard that too.
It's like Mexican Americans or Jewish Americans and transgender Americans is a category.
Yes, new
These
category.
People are going to die on this hill.
Well, they're going to die. That's for sure.
So this is the last clip. So Beglia, who's the old Democrat, used to work for the Clinton administration. He's fed up with listening to this and he goes off on him. This is the last clip. But at the same time, you can hear him. It's in there. It's subtle. But he pulls back on certain things he knows will alienate this new group. And so he couches. He does couching. He goes, well, except for, blah, blah, blah. He's a wimp. Now, Paul Beglia, who's a guy who's pretty much a clone of Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC. They're very similar personalities, and they just go after, they hate Republicans to an extreme. But this situation, this is near the end of this, I don't know, a half hour of discussion. And he just gets irked and blasts these people. But at the same time, you can hear him not really, completely closing the door on him.
I'm smiling, Wally, because not only do we not explain it, we rub their noses in it if they dare use the wrong word. I'm sorry, there is a woke, censorious, preachy elitism in our movement, and we got to flush that. You don't go to someone who's busting his ass at $7 an hour and tell him he's privileged just because his skin is white. I'm sorry, you don't do that. If you want to get his vote, okay? And I'm not naive. I understand there's racism and prejudice in this country. I want to build bridges to those folks. I want to reach out to them. And the easier way to do that is on these economic crises that they're all facing, irrespective of race, gender, and religion.
Wow. Wow. But there's a lot of these consultants are saying this. They're saying you've got to stop with the woke stuff. It doesn't work. So he had that right.
Oh, but man. Then he bet you could hear him backing off on it, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tell me that. Please tell me that that I can get a longer version of this on NPR Plus, on the Plus bundle.
On the bundle.
On the bundle.
You need to get the bundle. What are you thinking?
We have a bundle. Did you hear our bundle?
No, I didn't hear our
bundle.
Okay,
so does this sound like you? You love No Agendas Podcast. You wish you could get more of your favorite show. And you want to support No Agendas' mission to create the best podcast in the universe. If all of that sounds appealing, then it's time to sign up for the No Agenda Plus Bundle.
Just send your cash.
Plus bundle.
Yeah.
A bunch of losers.
It sounds pretty much like an NPR ad. Whoever did that did a good job.
Jeffrey Crocker. But I find it somewhat encouraging that I'm hearing, you know, we had a consultant on the last show where she said the same thing. You got to stop calling brown people Latinx. You got to stop with this nonsense because it's condescending. And now you're right. Oh, no, now we have transgender Americans, another category instead of just Americans. Yeah. Now it's, you know, American.
Yeah. In fact, it's a good point. They've added categories.
Yes.
They've added a new category. Instead of backing off on this
adding
identity
more.
Politics.
Yeah. And adding more.
They've added a new category.
60 Minutes took a little different tact. And we're very serious about what's going on here.
With Arizona called last night, Donald Trump swept all seven swing states. Six of them flipped from Joe Biden's column in 2020. So far, the president-elect has won just over 50% of the popular vote, and he made gains in key demographics, including the young, Latinos, and women. Republicans took the Senate and are on track to control the House. Tuesday, more than 80% of all the nation's counties moved toward the right. The shift is decisive and leaves Democrats arguing over how they misread the people. To understand what just happened, we went to Pennsylvania, one of the places that made all the difference.
All the difference. Well, it's very serious, John. This is the shift.
Okay, Adam.
The shift is apparent, and it's always ultimately in America, whether you're Black American, Brown American, Red American, Gay American, Trans American, it's always about the eggs.
For 25 years, Chris Borick has been conducting one of the leading polls of Pennsylvania voters. He's a professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, next to Northampton County.
It was an Obama county, then it was a Trump county, then it was a Biden county, and in 2024, it once again is a Trump county.
How did Trump win?
It's a great question. You know, first of all, I think he had the winds on his side here from talking to voters. They're not in a great mood. They're not in a good place. There's lots of good things happening in Northampton County. The economy's good, but they're feeling things in their lives that really trouble them. Housing prices here, grocery prices. I can't tell you how many times when I've talked to people about elections this year, they referenced eggs and the price of eggs.
TooManyEggs.com. I'll have one more.
Yeah, TooManyEggs.com. Perfect.
Yeah, I have one more clip here. But the issue with trans is much less of, and the Republican Party played this very well. It's much less about if you know, all right, you know, so you've let some person who is licensed by the Association of Pediatrics and, you know, who are stand to lose their license if they don't go with the flow of, oh, you're depressed. You're a boy, little girl. That's one thing. And America's like, well, you know, okay. But when you put boys into girls sports, that's the line. That's the limit. It was so stupid. And we said so. We kept saying this is dumb. Americans will not stand for that. Hey, my girls shouldn't be competing against this dude, no matter what you say. Yeah,
and you know, this, and let we just this analyze this for a second, because you're right. We have been talking about this since I think Leah Thomas or before.
Yes.
And it's like, it's such an obvious thing. And there's the pictures that I think a number of years ago, there were these pictures of that big black dude, the guy's a monster running track and field, all muscled up big guy running track and field with women, and the NCAA saying, oh, you know, he identifies as a girl, so he should be a girl.
Yeah.
I think the worst part was the hordes of mostly Democrats defending the practice.
And then one other thing, which is just abhorrent, is the tranny story hour. Come on. You know, it was dumb. It's just too stupid. But anyway, according to CBS, it's about the eggs. TooManyEggs.com.
Egg prices doubled and featured on the menu of discontent. At the Nazareth Diner near Bethlehem, no one sees a sunny side to inflation, high interest rates, and housing prices. The average tab here in 2020 was $24. Now it's $38. And that's the election in an eggshell.
The prices have went up, obviously, because the food cost. And for a family of like five people, I have them come in and say, oh my God, I spent $100 with the tip for breakfast.
Just
that's
the tip.
Crazy. Which it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 7:30 we open, 7:30 to 10. Yeah.
Roz Werkheiser was a waitress 25 years ago. Now she runs the place.
My mother used to always say, got to vote Democrat. You know, they're for the poor people.
You grew up in a Democratic household.
Yes.
But you just voted for Donald Trump.
Yes.
Inflation is down by more than half. Interest rates are falling. Mortgage rates are falling. Wages are going up. Are you not feeling that?
I don't feel it. No, I don't feel it. I don't feel it at all. Everybody I talk to, nobody's wages went up. But we had 4 years of this. I mean, 4 years. Gas was super high. Yes, it just went down now, but what the past three and a half years it was up.
So their analysis is it's the price of eggs. And yeah, that is very important. And Trump spoke to that constantly, specifically. It's like, oh, come on. There's one other issue at play, and I'm in a way a little disappointed, but you know, I'm my good friends in text groups, they're just like, the libs are losing their mind, they're melting down.
Who is this?
Friends of mine, like guys who should know better. And I call them out on it, and they still do it.
Sure.
And it's funny. And one of the things is, I can't believe they gave Oprah $1 million. You know, like, and $4 million for private jets. You know, when you're running the greatest show on earth, which the presidential election is, that's what you do. Please don't go look at what Trump spent. It was half the amount of money. But, you know, that's what Oprah put together. We saw the show. She put out a studio audience. You know, was it in her own town? I don't even think it was in her own town.
I have no idea where it was.
You build a set.
I didn't like travel.
$100,000 to call her daddy. Well, that's, you know.
No, it was $500.
Whatever.
By the way.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like, that's what you do in a presidential campaign. Who cares? But this is a big problem.
I just to defend the people that are on the other side of this argument. Nobody, you're right. And I think it's absolutely, especially if you have $1 billion to spend. But how do you have $1 billion to spend and then go over budget by 20 million? I mean, that's what was shocking.
That's pretty interesting. Tina told me that Trump offered to pay that. Did I see that somewhere?
Yeah, that keeps going around. I haven't heard it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard about him supposedly. I still think it's tongue in cheek.
Yeah, well, do you think? Anyway, so the Cuomo kid had this Democrat bundler on. So she's someone who collects a lot of money and
yes,
does
this
stuff.
Woman. Yeah, this. By the way, before you play that, this woman is the Asian woman,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, she
the China doll. She's a China doll. She looks porcelain.
Yeah, she's got one of those looks. But she had. And I'm dubious about this. About why would you come on and
It's News
Nation.
Like this. It's News Nation. What do you expect?
Well, okay, what am I thinking? Never mind. Just ignore what I said.
And although Oprah says she wasn't paid a cent by Harris, the campaign did pay her company $1 million to produce Oprah's star-studded town hall. Well, isn't that paying? And the Harris team reportedly spent six figures to build that set I told you about on that Call Her Daddy podcast. Bro, you know, which I got her hundreds of thousands of.
Where's our no agenda money? We want a new set.
No, I think Cuomo's thinking that to him. He's thinking that himself.
Hey, I could have built a set for half a mil.
I told you about on that Call Her Daddy podcast.
That Call Her Daddy podcast. That's a little bit of envy in your voice, Chris.
You know, which I got her hundreds of thousands of views, but I mean, I don't know that it was cost effective. And then you got Eminem. Then you got Beyonce. So let's talk to somebody who lives.
You know, what about Eminem? And, you know, oh, they paid Beyonce $1 million. There's no evidence of that.
There, in the FEC filings, there's a bunch of evidence of it. Yeah.
$1 million for Beyonce?
No, they don't have the exact numbers for. They have bundles of money that went to different talent agencies. So you can't tell who got what.
Okay. All right. All right.
But it's a lot.
How come no one wanted an endorsement from the Podfather in the podcast election? What is wrong with you people?
Hey, I'm always bringing this topic up. You don't have to do it. You can stop.
Okay.
Got Eminem. Then you got Beyonce. So let's talk to somebody who lived it, okay? And is speaking out now with her own concerns. Lindy Lee joining us now. Lindy, thank you very much for taking the opportunity. What do you think of these allegations of what Oprah, I mean, either they paid the production company or they didn't. I've never heard of people getting paid for endorsements. Paid to perform, maybe, but usually they give it. But do you believe it?
It's not a matter of believing. It's literally in the report. And she can deny it however much she wants to, but it says Harper Productions on the FEC report. I really don't know how you get around that. It's her company. And she may not have gotten paid personally as a person, but it paid her company. So I think this is a matter of semantics. She got paid. And it's just, if my donors had known beforehand that the money would be dispersed this way, I do not think they would have given. You know, it's a sacred trust. These people, a lot of my donors have worked hard all their lives. And again, these are everyday Americans around the country. I didn't just deal with big donors. I also fundraised from grassroots donors who gave $25, as I mentioned. I did something called Geeks and Nerds for Harris. People are giving like $10 to $15. These are people, you know.
You know, hold on a second. She did that Geeks and Nerds with Wonder Woman. I wonder how much money she got paid.
I didn't hear what you said.
Oh. She said, I did something called Geeks and Nerds for Harris. And that was the Wonder Woman That was the Wonder Woman hosted webinar, Zoom call.
Right.
And so did she do that for free?
That's a good question. Yeah. Probably not.
$25, as I mentioned. I did something called Geeks and Nerds for Harris. People are giving like $10 to $15. These are people, you know, some people were living paycheck to paycheck. So it's a sacred trust for them to give money to a campaign. It is our utmost responsibility to use that money in a responsible manner and to not treat it as OPM, which is other people's money. If we can't handle campaign money the right way, how can taxpayers, how can Americans possibly trust us that we would handle taxpayer money the right way?
Oh, right. Oh, well, gee.
Now, let's go back to your point that you get a pot full of money, you spend it the way you think is wisely spent, even though he had to buy endorsements, which is kind of low.
Pathetic.
When you could probably get them for free if you tried hard enough, you get better people.
Yeah, you know, Springsteen is going, what? People got paid?
Sure he is. I'm going to Canada. So, there's something about her whining about this, which is, if I give $25 to the Harris campaign and she gives that $25 to Beyonce, yeah, or she gives that $25 to
Oprah
Ogilvy to do an ad.
Yeah. What's the difference?
What's the difference? I mean, the Beyonce, if somebody thinks Beyonce's going on and on about something is going to be more valuable than the advertisement. Yes. So I just wonder, this woman is just, it seems like a counter agent, or she's like a
yeah. I mean, she First of all, she just doesn't look trustworthy, period. Second, she's on Cuomo's show. So, okay. But your point is exactly right. It's like, that's how the thing is. They all believe still for some reason, even though it didn't work with Hillary Clinton, that celebrities matter. Newsflash, at this hour, breaking, celebrities don't matter in people's lives. They haven't mattered for quite a long time. I think the MTV Music Awards were on. Did we miss that? I mean, this is the level of non-caring. Nobody cares anymore. It's just, it's not that important. The whole industry, the gossip industry is not, maybe TMZ is probably doing okay.
You just made an excellent point.
Look at the magazines.
Whatever happened to the gossip industry that used to be so important? We used to have Hedda Hopper. We used to have the Archer, Army Archer, whatever his name was, and all these different people that would do gossip. All that's left now is page 6 on the New York Times or the New York Post. And I'll tell you the truth. When I go, I look at page 6 every once in a while, which is the gossip of the country, and I don't recognize any names on there. It's an embarrassment, I think. Am I embarrassed? Maybe I'm not.
No, the gossip, and look at the magazines at checkout. They're very thin, and it's always someone with cancer. it is. It's always, he's got cancer. No, it's not funny, but that is pretty
it's
much
not funny,
industry.
But it's like, that's true.
But the gossip industry sold out to entertainment by just hyping people up for movie ticket sales. Oh, they're in a fight. Oh, they're doing, it's like when that movie came out and it was, what's her name? She's married to, Ryan Gosling. And she had a movie come out recently, and she was like, oh, this is a great girls' night out movie. And Gosling is like, and by the way, it's a pretty good movie.
What movie is this?
And it's really about, it's about abuse and rape.
That sounds terrific.
Yeah. And so then the gossip industry is like, oh, well, you know, there's a spat going on between them. And the whole thing was so obviously set up. Just to you know, generate ticket sales. The other thing the gossip industry sold out to is the fashion industry. What are you wearing? Who are you wearing? Oh, this is beautiful. Oh, what? Go to our 360 cam. They sold out. They sold themselves out like a whores. Anyway,
I don't know if it was any different before.
Oh, no. There's
always the move ticket sales.
No, but it moved to the fashion industry.
Well, the fashion thing yeah. does seem new.
Yes. Yeah. Well, 5, 6
I mean, they've always
talked
about, oh, wearing a Dior, you know, they're wearing a Valentino.
I'm wearing Tom Ford. Who are you wearing? Who are you wearing? Well, can't you see Tom Ford on my back here? Hey, Tom Ford is hanging on to me. So there's all kinds of shifts going on, and people are rage quitting Twitter.
Hi, everyone. I have loved connecting with all of you on Twitter and then on X for all of these years. But it's time for me to leave the platform. I once believed that it was a place for...
In case you didn't know, this is Don Lemon.
for honest debate and discussion.
I saw this. But he's leaving the platform to do what? His last tweet, he tweets 3 more times after this.
Transparency and free speech. But I now feel it does not serve that purpose. In addition, starting this Friday, November 15th, X is implementing new terms of service, which, among other things, states that, quote, all disputes be brought exclusively in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas or state courts located in Tarrant County, Texas.
What's so new about this?
End quote. The full terms of service can be found on my written statement or on the X website. Now, as the Washington Post recently reported on X's decision to change the terms, this, quote, ensures that such lawsuits will be heard in courthouses that are a hub for conservatives, which experts say could make it easier for X to shield itself from litigation and punish critics. I think that speaks for itself. You can find me on YouTube at The Don Lemon Show, or on TikTok and Facebook at Don Lemon,
and
on Instagram and
Blue Sky
at Don Lemon Official. I hope you will join me there.
So this is the big shift. Everybody's moving to Blue Sky.
Some X users jumping ship to a new platform called Blue Sky. You might have heard of it in the past week or so. The open source social media platform says they've seen an influx of over 1 million users in the past week, bringing their total to 15 million users. So still low, but a good start. Many of those fleeing X after the election. They're unhappy that owner Elon Musk used that platform to support President-elect Trump. Now, Blue Sky was originally created by former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey in 2019. It's been around for a while, but it was recently open to everyone. So it had to be invite only for many years. Now it's open to everyone. The decentralized platform lets you post text, photos, and more. You can also better customize what you see, and it's easy to take your data and move to another platform later. My initial thought on this is that, yes, people are going to it. Is it as big as something like Threads or Facebook or Instagram or Twitter? No, but it's growing. There's a lot of sort of momentum behind it, and it looks just like Twitter.
Does it?
I was going to say, as someone who's kind of tiptoeing with it and trying to figure out if I want to make the switch, I think one of the things that people are concerned about on X is all the bots. And like, if you say anything, you're like inundated with comments and stuff like that. And so my question is, does that exist on Blue Sky as well?
So there's a lot of controls to help you see exactly what you want to see and to cut out some of that stuff.
Okay.
So they just have a lot of controls, and they have these algorithm lists. You can, like, you know, I'm still checking it out, but it seems like you can tweak it a lot more.
All right. So I got to say, well,
where did
things.
You get that commercial?
That's KTLA5 in Los Angeles. Let me just say something about Blue Sky. I knew about Blue Sky before it was launched. One of our producers worked on it. It was the secret Jack Dorsey project. I met one of our producers in South Carolina meetup, and he told me all about it. And it is open source. You can set up your own server. It's not like doing a Mastodon. But I got an invite very early on. I don't know, have you ever been on Blue Sky?
Nah.
No. It is Tranny Central. I mean,
really?
Oh, from day one.
Well, that's interesting because of Dorsey's kind of his he background.
He didn't have much to do with it at that point, but it was all just all these woke people and just, you know, trans rights flags everywhere. And I was like, okay,
interesting.
Yeah. So, but this is not a bad development. I feel that's perfect. You know, go where you want to go. And be with the people you want to be with. What you will find over there, as far as I know, maybe that's changed, but there's no algorithmic presentation of content. So it's
doomed then.
Yes. This is the same thing. It's the same thing with Noster. Noster, great idea, although not technically. I'm just going to say I don't think it's all that great, you know, because you have an identity that is cryptographically provable and no one can steal your identity. Okay. Of the 40,000 people that are on there, it's not that great. You know, they keep saying, oh, this is Noster is fantastic because, you know, it's censorship resistant. Yeah. No one wants to be on there because, again, there's no algorithm. And if there's no algorithm, there's no excitement. You don't get juiced up about stuff. That is the secret to these addictive, and I say that in air quotes, addictive social media networks. Is you have to have the algorithm. Otherwise, people will get bored of it. And
even on those short little, YouTube has a series of these clips now that they do. It's called, I don't even know what it's called.
Oh, you mean like TikTok-like clips, shorts. They're called shorts.
And you get on one of the threads, and they're all very similar, and like there'll be like
most of them are
different kinds of...
Most of them are TikTok videos just put on YouTube.
It's true. Most of them are TikTok videos they stole.
But this is good. I see this as good. People are now getting sick of it. You know, we already saw that, you know, people are leaving subscriptions on YouTube, and they're doing other things. They're going to find other things to do in their life. And as the news, cable news outlets diminish severely, and they move to, I guess, only pure opinion, there'll be little, there's just no money going to be left for news. It won't be that interesting to keep these stuff like X. I think it's kept alive by news clips. You know, you'll still get a joy read that is funny, but that's going to get old too. But at a certain point, how much more laughing can you do about the libs melting down? It's like, people will get bored. So it's just, it's
not the way we do it.
No. And that's mainly because we don't have video. That's the best part.
You know, ironically, you might be right. Back to the topic, I can bring it up the Ask Adam.
Oh, hold on a second.
Ask Adam.
No. Answer the question. Go.
All right.
Now the thing about Ask Adam is this is a cheap trick to get into some more analysis.
Okay.
Because it's pretty off the wall. Now this cheap. Is the one, of course, you play is Ask Adam Q, and then I'll ask you the question.
Okay, here we go.
When Vice President Kamala Harris was campaigning for the presidency, she landed on a signature line.
She landed on a signature line. Okay.
What was it?
Well, there's a couple. Did you just fall out of a coconut tree? But it's probably we're not going back. We're moving forward.
Wow. This is funny because when I heard this, what came to my mind was joy.
Well, that's not a signature line. That's just a word.
Well, we're both wrong.
Or unburdened by what has been?
We're both wrong. Oh. And you're wrong, still continue to be wrong.
So I'm just wrong.
Now you want to play Answer Plus Plus.
Okay.
When Vice President Kamala Harris was campaigning for the presidency, she landed on a signature line. This summer at the Democratic National Convention, it was everywhere. In the pump-up video set to Beyonce.
And when we fight, we win!
Oh, really? Plastered across posters in the audience and in speech.
When we fight, we win.
After speech.
Because as we've always known in Texas, cuando luchamos, ganamos. When we fight, we win.
After speech.
And as the next president of the United States always says, when we fight,
we win. In this election, the Democrats' fight was pretty good. They successfully ditched their unpopular presumptive nominee. They raised $1 billion with record-breaking speed. They reached tens of millions of people with their massive door-knocking and phone banking operations. But the win, of course, never came. And since then, we've seen another law of politics take shape. When you don't win, you fight amongst yourselves. The finger pointing began the morning after the election. Democratic Representative Richie Torres from New York said that, quote, Donald Trump has no greater friend than the far left.
Look, if the goal is to win elections on Twitter, then you should embrace movements like defund the police. But if the goal is to win elections in the real world, where it matters, then you have to appeal to working class people of color who historically have been the base of the Democratic Party.
That's him on MSNBC.
Well, this is very interesting, since we both were wrong about what the signature line was, and it goes to show that in popular the Democrat Party is divorced from understanding popular culture. Because if I ask my 28-year-old and I said, "What do you think?" She'll say coconut tree. She might say we're not going back. She might even say freedom. But I
freedom.
Don't freedom. I do not think that in popular culture anyone would say when we fight we win. Sieg Heil.
I was kind of surprised. I agree with all that. And the irony, of course, to what you just said, which is that they don't understand popular culture, is they're the ones wrapped up in Hollywood. But then again, Hollywood doesn't seem to understand popular culture either, with the results, the box office results they get with some of their good ideas.
Yeah,
so something's
amiss. Great ideas.
So here's a part two of this kind of cheat that I did.
Meanwhile, former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, who was instrumental in convincing President Biden to step aside, suggested in a New York Times interview that he should have thrown the nomination open earlier.
Had the president gotten out sooner, there may have been other candidates in the race. Kamala, I think, still would have won, but she may have been stronger having taken her case to the public sooner.
Pramila Jayapal, the Washington congresswoman who leads the Progressive Caucus, says Democrats didn't do enough to distinguish themselves from Trump.
We don't offer a different option. He is a billionaire, yes, but we also surrounded ourselves with billionaires, and we allowed corporate interests to dictate policy.
She's speaking there to NPR member station KUOW in Seattle.
We have to stand up for who we are, and I'm not sure we totally know, as a party, who we are.
Consider this. After a resounding defeat, the Democratic Party has to figure out where it goes next. And the struggle over its future is already underway.
Oh, well, that is interesting. I have a follow-up clip to that, specifically about Pelosi, because she has also lost her standing. And when I say lost your standing, I mean, the ladies from The View don't even like you.
About Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, child.
Oh, child. Oh, child. Oh, child.
She must have been absent the day in kindergarten where they did the lesson. If you've got nothing good to say, don't say anything at all. I mean, why, Nancy? Why? I find this so unproductive, so nasty, so unnecessary. It's like she wants to make sure that people know it wasn't her. She has no blame in this. I said Biden should have gotten out earlier. I said there shouldn't have been a primary. Don't blame me. I think it's really unseemly. Yeah. And, you know, frankly, it's done with.
Yeah.
Right. These criticisms against Biden. Look, we're not, we will never know if the result would have been different had Biden stepped off earlier. What we do know is that Biden is in there for the next 2.5 months. And this is what I'm going to tell Joe. Joe, since they're talking smack about you anyways, you know what, baby? Pardon Hunter.
Yeah.
Pardon Hunter, because we basically, America just pardoned a criminal.
Yes.
Who was convicted
yes.
of felonies.
Yes. Yes.
America
yes. Preach,
elected
girl.
A man who pardoned Jared Kushner's father.
No,
he's probably
no.
going to pardon some of the folks from January 6th, those insurrectionists.
Those insurrections.
So you know what? It's your son. He probably wouldn't have been prosecuted if his last name wasn't Biden. Baby, you got 2.5 months. Bye. I'm good with you pardoning Hunter.
Which brings us to much needed analysis of the Trump-Biden meeting. This is where you say, I have the clip!
And in fact, I have a clip or two.
President Biden met at the White House today with President-elect Donald Trump. As NPR's Tamara Keith reports, they both emphasized a desire to have a smooth transition.
With cameras on them, the two presidents shook hands. Biden said his administration would do everything it could to make sure Trump had what it needed for a smooth transition.
Welcome. Thank you, Jen. Thank you very much. And politics is tough. And it's, in many cases, not a very nice world, but it is a nice world today, and I appreciate it very much. A transition that's so smooth, it'll be as smooth as it can get.
Melania Trump didn't come to Washington for the visit, but First Lady Jill Biden gave the former president a handwritten letter to deliver to his wife.
So, first things first. When we see the picture of Trump and Biden walking down the little corridor there to the Oval Office, Trump being 6'3", Biden being 6'0", Biden is taller than Trump by at least an inch, if not an inch and a half. Now, the answer from the answer is, well, he's wearing orthopedic shoes. Okay, so there's four inches? No.
4 inches.
Trump did not meet with the real Joe Biden, in my opinion. That was Daddy Long Legs, the guy who was all jacked and can run and was speaking in the Rose Garden, all excited, all jacked up. And I don't, what I would have hoped is that he got to speak with the actual Joe Biden, who then would say, hey, here's the skeletons, here's who's out to get you, here's what you need to look out for, pardon Hunter. That would have been fine, but they psyoped. That was not Joe Biden. I'm going to stick to this.
But we don't know who he met with for the 2 hours that were closed.
No, we don't. We don't. But I mean, he was with that guy. I mean, they must have done like a switcheroo in one door, out the other door. Oh, hey, here I am. I'm Joe. It was so odd. You cannot.
You don't think that's possible?
Yeah. But I mean, these I cannot stand the his orthopedic shoes. It's not 4.5 inches.
Shoes.
4.5 inches of orthopedic shoes.
Yeah, he's also
shoes.
Got longer legs. That's the problem.
Yes.
And his gait is different.
So I'm hoping that...
I mean, the Biden that they saw, that they didn't show enough of this, by the way. I find that to be peculiar.
Well, of course not. We can't have
Biden
that.
At the, no, I'm talking about Biden at the beach.
Oh.
Biden. The recent the shots where he almost fell on his ass a couple of times trying to walk in sand.
Just trying to walk. Yeah.
No. Mm-mm.
They really minimized that. I'm surprised.
And I'm sure...
Well, it's already, the election's over, so why would you care now?
Anyway, 2 hours. I mean, oh, 2 hours. CBC had a report. I'll play this. It'll lead us into something else, I think.
Well, Mr. President-elect and former president, Donald, congratulations.
With broad smiles and a handshake, U.S. President Joe Biden and President-elect Donald Trump sat side by side in the Oval Office and put on a rare display of civility.
Looking forward to having a, like we said, smooth transition.
I very much appreciate that, Jim.
You're welcome.
In their face-to-face, yeah. Trump barely acknowledged the bitterness of their past.
Politics is tough, and it's, in many cases, not a very nice world, but it is a nice world today.
That's especially true for those in Trump's immediate orbit, like the Republicans in Congress, who greeted him with a hero's welcome.
Isn't it nice to win? It's nice to win.
Other wins for the Republicans, the House of Representatives, and a new Senate Majority Leader, John Thune of South Dakota. Also included in a stream of new appointments today, Florida Senator Marco Rubio as Secretary of State, and Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, who was the subject of a U.S. Justice Department investigation, as Attorney General. But to what extent Trump's bold new agenda was discussed, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre gave few details.
Look, they met for more than 2 hours. The length of the meeting tells you that they had an in-depth conversation on an array of issues.
With that much-anticipated meeting wrapping without a hitch, Trump is now one step closer into his steady march back to the White House.
I love the little subtle Nazi smear. He's one step closer to his march into the White House. He's goose-stepping his way in. By the way, I want to congratulate everybody on Mastodon. Thank you. Thanks to you and your memes, America was saved. I am so appreciative of that. What would we have done without your frog memes? We would not have won. We would not have won. Donald Trump is forever grateful. So I think we should discuss some of these appointments. You did a pretty good rundown on the newsletter, which ended in typical Dvorak trolling fashion by saying, nothing's going to change.
That's true.
It's like,
well, and that was suck. After talking about Vivek and
Max Elon and Max suck.
Was, and which one?
Max, sorry? Max, Macintosh computers suck. It was reminiscent of an old school column. Yeah, it was good.
Well, nothing's going to, well, with the government officials, Doge, okay, with the Department of Government. This is bull crap.
I need to say something. First of all, I'm sick of Doge. I'm sick of it. And I think it's borderline illegal if he holds any Dogecoin. I think there's issues because he's pumping an asset by doing this, and everybody knows it. Also,
I disagree. I don't think everybody knows it.
Enough people know it. I mean, he did this on Saturday Night Live. I mean, he's always pumping Doge, and he
should put that dog on his sweater or something.
The stupid dog. Yes. Okay. Doge. All right. Ha 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 ha. We get the joke. And now he's posting AI memes, computer generated pictures of him, and he looks all badass. Like, pride comes before a great fall. Elon, be very careful with what you're doing.
Now you're gonna have to make up your mind if his pride comes before a fall, or if he's an intelligence asset and if PSYOP, a walking PSYOP, it's got to be one or the other. Can't
when
be both.
When did I say he was a walking PSYOP?
Oh, I thought you were in the camp of him being a PSYOP.
No, I said he's no good. I never said.
Okay, well, that's different.
I never said he was a walking PSYOP. I said he's no good. But what I think he wants is he wants X to be the everything app. All payments run through X. It's going to turn into a news app that you can already see it. It will be where he categorizes it as a news app. It'll be for your news. And social media is over. People are not interested anymore. Maybe in 4 years, something will spark up again. But people just want to, what's going on? And they won't even care if it's real or not. Oh, that's funny. That's great. You know, what's happened? I'll just check in on X.
Actually, that's you. I think you made a point there again, which is shocking.
Oh, thanks.
Is that
thanks,
people
partner.
Don't care if the information is accurate no, or not. It's no, just they kind don't of goes care. By. If you know all these little details about everything, like in the bus, let's go back to the Bay of Pigs, the Castro situation, and you can just alter all the details and you know one side, say you know half the details are completely wrong and half of them are right, or you flip it. It doesn't make any difference. It's like the Gulf of Tompkin. So, it was like, okay, we found out it was a bunch of bull crap, but what difference does it make?
So, and I'll reiterate my stance on Elon. He's a phony. He is a front man for all these organizations. They've got real NASA, real Space Force people running SpaceX. There's real car people running Tesla. All of these other little things that fall apart. No one ever talks about, you know, boring company and the flamethrower and all this stuff.
I have to mention something. I don't know if you caught this, but Trump, and I think he did it as though he was joking. But I'm not convinced of it. He made the comment because Elon is hanging out in Mar-a-Lago.
Elon. Oh, he's uncle now to the kids. Elon.
He says he can't get rid of him.
Yes. Now, there you go. And, you know, I follow his jet. You know, there's a guy, he got kicked off of X, of course, but he still has a Mastodon account. And Elon's always on the plane and he's always on X. So, and then he's at Mar-a-Lago. He's not running anything. So in that regard, he's just a phony. He didn't invent Tesla, didn't invent SpaceX. The rocket came back. Go to Mars. Go to the moon. Impress me. And then with this Department of Governmental Efficiency, it's going to be Vivek.
Yes, well, that's my claim in the news. I made that claim in the news.
I was going to be Vivek. I have a clip.
The 2 trillion, I stand corrected.
No, I want to be very clear about the scale. I want to be very clear about the scale that we're thinking here. We're not thinking small. We're playing big here because we have a once-in-a-generation mandate right now. The American people have voted for drastic reform of the government, and our federal government is broken.
Not really.
It's no secret that it is a fourth branch of government, the administrative state that makes most of the rules, that creates a federal bureaucracy that's hampering our economy. So what do we want to do? We want to go in and slash and burn that bureaucracy to help Americans, stimulate the economy, and to restore self-governance again, Sean. The people we elect to run the government, they're not even the ones who run the government anymore. It's these unelected bureaucrats. Republican politicians have talked about fixing this for a long time, not with a lot of progress. So I do think it's going to take a couple of outsiders. Elon and I have built a great friendship over the last year. We're working together intensely, and we're not going to stop till we get the job done.
I'm sure they can trim $2 trillion.
Now, the first time I heard about the Republicans in particular, and I wasn't around, but the first time I heard about this was that Herbert Hoover, when he became president before the economic collapse of the 30s. I think it was called the Hoover Commission. I could be wrong about that. But he set up shop to do the exact same thing, because back then in the late 20s, the government was too big and needed to be trimmed. And then Bill Clinton came along, and there's a speech that's going around from 1996 where he comes out and he says, we've got it, you know, government's too damn big, we got to start trimming it down. And it went from, I think the figure was at the time the budget was just around a trillion, out seven. This has been going on forever. It never does anything except it's just bull crap.
This was indeed the Hoover Commission, which was the commission on organization of the executive branch of the government, also known as COEBG. I think Doge is much better than COEBG. And Truman actually used the Reorganization Act of 1949 to implement the recommendations. So they could only make recommendations of the Hoover Commission. I'm reading from Wikipedia in case you wondered. Reorganization plans issued under the act could be nullified by a concurrent resolution enacted by both chambers of commerce. So it didn't have a lot of girth to it, probably. But yes, I think you're right. The idea of doing this is a very tall order. It would be great. They'll make some changes, I'm sure. Let's go through some of these other.
By the way, it will just be recommendations. They have no power to do anything.
I'm in agreement with you. Let's.
I have Doge clips if you want to just get them out of the way.
Sure.
And I called him Doge, knowing that it would attract your attention.
I'm so attracted to your clips.
This is NPR's trying to explain it. This last is night, Doge 1.
Donald Trump announced the creation of the Department of Governmental Efficiency, or Doge. He named two of his most prominent allies from the business world to lead Doge, Elon Musk, the CEO of SpaceX.
But just a point of order. The pronunciation of Doge is about the shitcoin known as Doge. Otherwise, it would be Doge or something. So the fact that it's Doge is completely connects it to that. So I just don't like it.
X and Tesla. And Vivek Ramaswamy, noted, an entrepreneur who ran against Trump for the Republican nomination earlier this year. Doge is getting a lot of attention, but a lot about it is unclear. Here to tell us what we do know is NPR political correspondent Daniel Kurtzleben. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Elsa.
All right, let's do this. What do we know so far about Doge?
We know very little, but we can glean some information from the statement Trump put out about it. For example, it is not clear if Trump envisioned Doge as an official governmental department, and creating that would require an act of Congress.
Right.
But what we do know is that Trump said Musk and Ramaswamy would be providing guidance from, as he put it, outside of government. So presumably, question mark, they are not intended to be government officials.
Huh.
But that raises more questions, because if this is an outside commission somehow, how is it funded?
Right.
If it's taxpayer, right, how does that work? And how big is it? If it's somehow maybe funded from outside of government, wouldn't there be conflicts of interest? But then there's one more important point here, which is that whatever cuts Doge ends up recommending, Musk and Ramaswamy can't cut anything. Congress has the budget power.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yes. No one thinks about this. I'm glad you have these clips. Is it NPR, even though they are spot
they're
on
a roll right now. NPR, after the election, has calmed down. They're not doing propaganda. They're trying to explain things to the public, which is what they're supposed to do. Yes, and I think they're doing a decent job at the moment.
If you notice, Elon Musk, I'm going to cut all funding to NPR. All 4% that they get from government funding.
All right.
Yes, because they're woke. They're no good. All right.
Doge 2.
Calm down.
Okay, so do we know anything about what Musk and Ramaswamy's priorities might be?
In short, cutting, but that's about it. Ramaswamy said during his primary campaign for president that he wanted to cut the federal workforce by 75%.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Musk said during Trump's October campaign rally at Madison Square Garden, he wants to cut government spending by $2 trillion. Now, both of those would be massive if they somehow happened. $2 trillion is around one third of total government spending per year. That would be very hard to cut without slashing the biggest government spending programs like Medicare and Social Security, which Trump has said he would not cut. So it's unclear how that would work. Likewise, cutting three quarters of the federal workforce is a lot. And keep in mind, there are federal workers all over the country, including in red states. So it's not as if GOP members of Congress would be gung-ho about cutting a bunch of jobs. But here's something important. We don't know what the top priority of this commission is. The statement about it talks a lot about cutting the federal workforce, but also talks about spending. Those two are not equivalent. The federal workforce is such a small part of government spending. As of 2022, that workforce received around $270 billion in compensation. Government spending total is $6.5 trillion. So it's hard to put a dent in that by cutting workers.
It's a gimmick. This whole Doge thing is a gimmick.
Well, that's what we're concluding, aren't we? Yes. Let's go to the last clip we've done.
How does this new department or non-department, I don't know what to call this yet, play into what we know about Trump's other ambitions for his second term?
I mean, in brief, it aligns with something he did at the end of his last term, which is called Schedule F. The basic idea is to recategorize federal workers, replace people in career positions with political appointees. Biden rescinded that. But he could do that again, cutting a lot of workers. But the big question to me is Trump's fiscal plans. This could save some money, but he wants a bunch of tax cuts.
Exactly.
And so deficits could go up as they did the last time he was president.
That is NPR's Daniel Kurtzleben. Thank you, Daniel.
So one of the people not really talked about in this storm of appointees is RFK Jr. We don't know exactly what his position will be, but I think the effect of him saying we're going to make America healthy again is already having an effect, as this came out on Good Morning America.
This morning, Kraft Heinz says it's pulling Lunchables from the National School Lunch Program. It comes after Consumer Reports urged the government to drop the product from school lunches entirely.
We found relatively high doses of lead, cadmium, or both in all of them. And most also had phthalates, which is a chemical used to make plastic that had been linked to a host of health problems.
Kraft Heinz bet big on its push to get Lunchables into schools, modifying the product to comply with federal guidelines. Touting Lunchables as a way schools could cut costs, but nutrition advocates criticized offering processed, branded foods in schools. And Kraft says the demand never materialized. It's the latest school lunch idea to face challenges.
We also need to significantly change the quality of food that kids are getting at school.
As First Lady, Michelle Obama made improving nutrition a priority, resulting in new standards in 2010. Studies showed the standards helped lower childhood obesity, but many schools said the costs were too high. And one study found students were throwing away 60% of vegetables and 40% of fruits. The Trump administration rolled back the regulations in 2018, but now with Robert F. Kennedy expected to play a major role in the nation's health care, more changes could be on the way.
I'll get processed food out of school lunch immediately. About half the school lunch program goes to processed food. We're creating diabetes problem in our kids by giving them food that's poison.
Kraft Heinz says Lunchables meets all safety standards.
So Kraft is smart. Like, we better cut this right away. We don't want any bad. Let's be good guys here. Well, there's lead in there. Oh, yeah.
No, lead and cadmium.
It's processed crap, and they know it. And I think this is a good development. Let's talk about some of the other appointees.
Good luck.
Let's talk about some of the other appointees. Do you want to, you have clips, I'm sure.
I have clips kind of naming and shaming.
Yeah, well, you name and shame, and you do a clip, and then I'll do a clip.
Okay, well, let's go. Where are my clips?
Where are
Trump
clips?
Chooses? Let's start with this one. Let's do the long form one. There we have a bunch of people all jumbled together. This Trump chooses long form NPR.
Okay.
Trump is moving at a rapid clip, announcing personnel picks for his new administration. And some of them, I think, are what we could safely call shock nominees.
Wow. Did you hear how she sounded there?
No. Did cue me in it.
Again. Hold on a second. Let me get the clip. Here, listen and tell me this is not the same lady.
I think are what we could safely call shock nominees.
Oh, there's no winning.
Doesn't she sound the same?
Hey, it could be the same person doing voiceover on the.
Yeah, it's her. It's her, yes.
Oh, there's no winning.
New administration. And some of them, I think, are what we could safely call shock nominations.
It's her. Wow.
There it's was her. Fox and Friends host Pete Hegseth for defense secretary. Then there's former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard for director of national intelligence and Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz for attorney general. We're going to be talking about these picks for weeks to come. They all lack relevant management experience, but they have the most important qualification of all, which is loyalty to Trump and a willingness to execute on his vision. And all of this is in line with Trump's lessons learned from the first time in office, when he surrounded himself with people who were generally very well qualified for their jobs, but who ultimately stood in the way of the norms busting things that Trump was trying to do.
Excellent. Okay. That's good long form. There's no secrets. Let's just all hold hands. And
by the way, that's a great catch.
It's her.
It's
her.
Possibly it's the her. Same woman it's doing her. Voices for the, that was American Dad.
Yes. Yeah, maybe she is. She's a little side gig. Okay. Let's start with Gaetz. Let's just go with Gaetz because he is by far the most controversial. We have Democrats and Republicans who are befuddled by this choice. Do you have any Gaetz clips?
I have to, just the announcement of it, but I do have, and I could have gotten some clips from, it was one of the, I think it was clips. Nicole Wallace.
Don't worry. I have some clips. Don't worry. I got some clips. Where's your Gates clip?
Well, I don't know if the Gates clip is in here. It's Trump chooses Rubio and Gabbard. Here, Trump chooses Gates.
Got it. NPR.
President-elect Trump floored some Senate Republicans today.
Florida.
For Attorney General. So NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports Trump opted for a loyalist with a national reputation as a disruptor to help him overhaul the Justice Department.
Trump's pick for Attorney General, Florida Republican Matt Gaetz, set off shockwaves among Senate Republicans. He's a top Trump loyalist and a conservative firebrand. He was the member who led to the removal of former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy over a year ago. And part of their public feud was over a House ethics investigation about allegations about Gates possibly involved in sex trafficking. The Justice Department investigated that and did not bring any charges, but there's still a House ethics investigation.
So I'll play my first clip and then we'll discuss. This is Caitlin, the $3 million woman over there at CNN, with George Conway and his view on Gates as pick.
My legal sources are here, a pair of former federal prosecutors, and Ellie Honig and Elliot Williams, and also the conservative attorney who was once actually, if you can remember that far back, considered by Trump to be his solicitor general, the number three at the Justice Department, now outspoken Trump critic, George Conway. That was a very long introduction. George?
Yes?
Your thoughts?
I everybody's like shocked, surprised. Duck. There's nothing surprising about this. This is Matt Gaetz, in a lot of ways, is the perfect attorney general for Donald Trump. Okay? I mean, we have a convicted criminal who's a president who has been adjudicated to engage in sexual abuse. So why not select a guy who has been loyal to him and who wants to seek revenge in the same way Donald Trump does, and who was accused of sex trafficking. He's the perfect choice. So I don't know why everybody's surprised.
All right, your thoughts. I have another clip, but your thoughts on Matt Gaetz as Attorney General.
Well, when I was watching Nicole Wallace she had Swalwell on.
Hey.
And Swalwell, well, it's interesting because I've seen Swalwell clips now for a couple of days. He's showing up. He's got a new agent or something. He's showing up on a lot of clips. And he sounds extremely reasonable. And he said that everyone's all bent out of shape about Gates. And, of course, we remember that he got Kevin McCarthy kicked out of the House.
The speaker.
And Kevin McCarthy goes around now on a different Fox shows calling Gaetz a pedophile.
Yeah.
Out and out calls him a pedophile.
It's a bit of an issue.
And yes, I would say. And so Swalwell says this is bull crap. The whole thing is just a setup, so he won't get confirmed by the Senate. And he goes on and says, you guys are all freaked out about nothing because it's not going to happen, which, you know, might be true, but I didn't think much of it one way or the other until they had the Senate whip, the new Senate
whip
guy on this morning's John Roberts show. And he says that when they brought up Gates, he was like, and he's a Republican, he's hemming and hawing in a very awkward way. Because he was asked point blank, are you, as a senator, just going to just approve all these things, just across the board, or are you going to give a careful thought or something? And the guy was hemming and hawing in a very awkward way, which makes me think of that Swalwell may be correct that Gates just won't get approved.
That's possible, and it doesn't really matter. I have a thought based upon another clip with the $3 million woman. Listen to this.
If Trump's pick for Attorney General is confirmed by the Senate, of course, a big if tonight, they will have a long to-do list, including ending weaponized government, Trump's words, protecting the border, dismantling criminal organizations, rooting out corruption at the Justice Department, and fighting crime. And I have new reporting tonight on who Trump may install in the second highest position there at the DOJ. I'm told Trump is seriously considering naming his lead attorney that you may recognize from his criminal cases, who represents him there, Todd Blanche, to serve as the next deputy attorney general. Though I should note tonight, nothing has been finalized.
This is now I'm seeing a pattern. I'm seeing a pattern with what President Trump is doing. He has Elon as the guy out front, and Vivek is going to be tasked with actually rolling up his sleeves and going in. Matt Gaetz is the lightning rod. He's perfect because all Trump has to say is, hey, Matt, what's that in your mouth? I mean, that guy is so compromised. The real guy is Todd Blanche. This guy he's the one. You're deputy attorney general. You've got power. You've got a lot of power. This guy was a United States attorney for the Southern District of New York. He's a real New Yorker guy. He's been, he's done racketeering, public corruption. This is a serious lawyer. He's born in 74, so he's 50. This is the guy. This is the guy who's going to change a lot of things. And Matt Gaetz is just a distraction. It doesn't matter who is put in there. As long as it's compromised. I'm telling you, Matt Gaetz is easy. Matt, do this. No, I don't feel like it. What's that in your mouth? Oh, I'm sorry. We have those pictures. I think Todd Blanche is the guy to watch. He's the guy that's going to. And who is the deputy attorney general under Merrick Garland? Do you know?
No.
No, I don't either. No one ever talks about him. You think that guy doesn't have some real clout, can't do something? I'm pretty sure he does.
Well, during the previous era, when you had some of those creeps struck, whatever his name is.
It was FBI.
Oh, that was FBI, but it was still the second. It was an underling. It was the second level that was doing all the damage.
They have a lot of power. They can do a lot of things. So I think
I like the theory.
Matt Gaetz,
you set up a straw man and you have some real nasty assholes underneath. Yes. Now, I don't think that's true with the border guy. That guy.
Well, let's do the border guy. Do you have a clip of the border guy?
I do not.
Okay. I have a clip of the, I have two clips of the border guy. This is CBC. So it's international news. And wait, I'll play that one second. Hold on. Where's my guy here? Oh, here we go. This guy.
Democrats are already preparing to push back on former President Trump's planned migrant deportation program. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey is already declaring that her state will not comply.
If the Trump administration requests it, would the Massachusetts State Police assist in mass deportations?
No, absolutely not. Every tool in the toolbox has got to be used to protect our citizens, to protect our residents, and protect our states, and certainly to hold the line on democracy and the rule of law.
But the president-elect's newly named border czar, Tom Homan, says he won't be stopped by sanctuary cities or states. Watch.
And look, I've seen some of these Democratic governors say they're going to stand in the way. They're going to make it hard for us. Well, I a suggestion. If you're not going to help us, get the hell out of the way, but we're going to do it. So if we can't get assistance from New York City, we may have to double the number of agents we send in New York City, because we're going to do the job. We're going to do the job without you or with you.
And Homan defended the president-elect's deportation plan, saying that it puts our national security first.
President Trump has made it clear we will prioritize public safety threats and national security threats first. If you're in the country illegally, you shouldn't feel comfortable. Absolutely not. I won't feel comfortable if I'm in a country illegally. You shouldn't be comfortable either, because when you enter this country illegally, you have committed a crime. You are a criminal and you're not off the table.
And I think this is great. I mean, I don't even care if the guy does it. I just want to hear him say he does it every day, all day long. I'm going to do it. Get out of the way. Brr. He's perfect.
One tough cookie.
He's perfect. And, it's.
Yeah, central casting.
Yes.
You walk over the border, have a baby. Congratulations. The baby's now a U.S. citizen. It's frankly ridiculous.
That was President-elect Trump 5 years ago expressing his desire to end birthright citizenship, a 14th Amendment right guaranteeing anyone born on U.S. soil U.S. citizenship. And as we inch closer to the beginning of his next administration, it appears Trump may move forward with ending that right. And I talked to immigration attorney Ernesto Walsh, who says he could be successful in doing so.
Could you see there being any legal challenges to this?
Oh, absolutely, without question. It'll be challenged. And now, at the end of the day, whether it'll be something that they'll be allowed to remove or not, it's more likely that they will be able to pull this benefit.
Walsh says it likely wouldn't be applied retroactively, meaning no one would lose citizenship if they were born here. And Walsh says all of Trump's immigration proposals will take time to implement.
It's important to understand that the courts are severely backlogged. And so with even the most aggressive spirit that President Trump may have, it still logistically takes time in order to be able to do things.
And I think this is one of the reasons why we see the private prison stock soaring on Wall Street.
Yeah, that was a good pick.
We should have had that one. One last one on the on our new bulldog, border bulldog.
Before you go on, I do have to make one comment, which is this 14th Amendment thing, the way they present it as though it's, oh, my God, we had this 14th Amendment. It's a violation of rights. Do you have to remember the 14th Amendment, which was acted in 1868, was done to protect the birthrights of American slaves that were freed. That's the only, it wasn't for so some people could come into right. town and have a baby.
Right. It's interpretation of the law, as usual. The border bulldog is also putting Scandinavia on notice.
With Joe Biden's time in the White House rapidly running out and U.S. President-elect Donald Trump naming his new team of top officials at a furious pace, Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland today chaired a meeting of the federal government's newly reactivated Cabinet Committee on Canada-U.S. Relations. But that relationship looks almost certain to become more complicated on a number of fronts. One of Trump's key promises has been to carry out mass deportations of migrants who have entered the U.S. mainly via Mexico. But in an interview this week, Tom Homan, Trump's newly appointed border czar, put Canada on notice over its border.
It's an extreme national security vulnerability on the northern border, and it's one of the things I'll tackle as soon as I'm in the White House.
Human smuggling has risen sharply across the Canada-U.S. border, particularly between eastern Quebec, New York, and Vermont. The U.S. Border Patrol says it encountered more than 19,000 people crossing in this area between October 2023 and October of this year. Homan fears criminals or terrorists could make their way into America via this route, and he wants more enforcement on both sides.
Yeah.
And look, it has to be President Trump has to work with Prime Minister Trudeau and say, look, you need to enforce whatever immigration laws you have because this is a gateway.
Get out, you dirty Canadians. Get out. Get out of here. The border bulldog's on the case.
Just as an aside from something that was said in that clip, they make a big point of this, too. It's like, Trump is appointing people at a breakneck rate, breakneck speed.
A fast clip.
So it seems to me Trump's been running for this job for at least a year. That it just seems to me that if you're going to run for president and then become president on January 6th or whatever you get with the day
20th.
That's right.
No, the riot is on the 6th.
You get put in as president on the 20th.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you have your cabinet and everything, all your ducks in a row, like 6 months before you even started your campaign? Wouldn't you have everybody lined up, ready to, would you like this job, that job, the other job? I mean, it just seems to me.
Well, he has them lined up, and I don't.
Yeah, but it's only part of them. Why don't you just roll out the entire cabinet in one day? I mean, I don't see why this has to be dragged out like this, even though they say it's a breakneck. I think it's slow.
Okay. It's my understanding the way President Trump does these things, he has a big list and he puts a whole bunch of people on it and he floats that around because he wants to get feedback from people. It's almost like choosing the right UFC fighter, you know, to who's going to bring in the biggest crowd. He has all kinds of show business. He's done that
6 months ago.
Well, because he has recess appointments that he's trying to get done.
No, I'm just saying the list, to pass the list around.
I don't know. Maybe because he got shot. I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
I just find the whole thing peculiar.
He was focusing on running, and I know that the press secretary, I know several people who were on the list, including my neighbor. I don't know if I ever brought that up, but she was on the list. She was in Mar-a-Lago for a week.
I actually have discussed it.
For a week. And I'm delighted to hear that.
You okay?
No, I'm not. Better. Alina Haba is going to be the spokeshole, which is great. She's the.
You think she's a lawyer?
She's cute. That's what you want.
She is. Well, if you just want a cute spokesman,
that's all you need. That's all you need. And I also think she's not going to do something every single day. I think maybe once a week, maybe every, I don't think they're going to do, he's learned from that mistake. Anyway, let's move on to another interesting pick. I'll set you up.
Hegseth's announcement coming as the Wall Street Journal reports that the Trump transition team is considering a draft of an executive order that would create a panel of retired military personnel empowered to review and recommend the removal of 3- and 4-star generals. That order is still a draft, but it's also in line with previous comments from Hegseth, echoing Trump's claims that the military is being undermined.
It's one thing to have DEI inside your corporation or inside your university. It's a whole other thing to have it inside the 101st Airborne. You can move to a different state if you want to go to a different school or if you want a different tax rate. We only have one military. And if the military goes woke, then it is less equipped to fight the wars it needs to fight.
I'm straight up just saying we should not have women in combat roles. It hasn't made us more effective, hasn't made us more lethal, has made fighting more complicated. We've all served with women and they're great. Mm-hmm. It just, our institutions don't have to incentivize that in places where traditionally, not traditionally, over human history, men in those positions are more capable.
Okay, so he's anti-DEI. Your thoughts on Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense?
Well, this is the one I think maybe the most controversial of the picks, mainly because they keep the left and the crappy media keeps calling him a Fox host when he's actually, he is a Fox host, but so are a lot of different people. I mean, there's like coaches that go on and do analysis of football games.
John Brennan's MSNBC host.
Guest. So, but the thing is, he's a two-time decorated Afghanistan, Iraq War vet, both of them, two Bronze Stars. He's been running veterans organizations. He's a buffed guy. The guy's buffed and tatted up, and he's kind of an interesting character. He has no... I don't think it's a bad idea to have somebody that is this adamant picked, and he probably is qualified to do something, but he's not he doesn't have a background of a bureaucrat, and he can't, you know, I don't see how somebody like that can run the Pentagon. But taking your step and saying who's going to be under him, with him being the front man for somebody else that we don't know who it is.
Yes, this is the format.
I think would make it all work fine. And he would also at the same time learn the ropes, because the way I see it, I think he's probably a great guy, smart. I've seen him talk on, he goes on all these shows. He handles himself well. And
he's a Fox News host. Hello.
He can do the, he could do a great job of being the front man for somebody who knew the ropes of the bureaucracy and how it operates, which is something you just can't walk into. I mean, I've worked in a bureaucracy myself, a government bureaucracy, and it's daunting. And I don't see how you just don't take charge of the Pentagon, the one that can't even get audited, out of the blue with no experience running a crazy organization like that. So it's, I think now I'm going to relent and go with that. He's not a bad pick if you put the right guy under him.
Yes. And so I agree. We don't yet have information on who the deputy Secretary of Defense would be. But Pete has all the right ideas. And he is, I would say, read in on the strategy. And he knows how to talk about it. He knows how to sell it, as witnessed by him on the Sean Ryan podcast.
The Pentagon is in the book, the exact amount of years, but in the past X number of years, 10, 12, 15, the Pentagon has a perfect record in all of its war games against China. We lose every time inside the Pentagon war games. We know what our real capability. You see, we didn't even get to this part of the war on warriors. I mean, the military-industrial complex, the way we procure weapon systems. You know, we're always, the way our system works, the way our bureaucratic system works, where the speed of weapons procurement works, we're always a decade behind in fighting the last war. Whereas China, we have, you know, what did Rumsfeld say? You go to the war, the army you have. We have China's building an army specifically dedicated to defeating the United States of America. That is their strategic outset. Take hypersonic missiles. So if our whole power projection platform is aircraft carriers and the ability to project power that way strategically around the globe, and yeah, we have a nuclear triad and all of that, but a big part of it. And if, you know, 15 hypersonic missiles can take out our 10 aircraft carriers in the first 20 minutes of a conflict, what does that look like?
Wow.
I mean, and when they're, if they've already got us by the balls economically, which you pointed out very well, with our grid, culturally, there's plenty of elite capture going on around the globe. I mean, and then microchips and everything. Why do they want Taiwan? They want to corner the market completely on the technological future. We can't even drive our cars without the stuff we need out of China these days. I mean, they have a full spectrum, long-term view of not just regional but global domination, and we have our heads up our asses.
Pete knows exactly how to sell China. He's going to be perfect as Secretary of Defense. It's perfect. Whoever runs it underneath him, we don't know.
Yeah, he's perfect. That would be more money spent.
Oh, well, yes. In fact,
which is going to have to be done because the way things are going, it's going to, I mean, I still think 2026 is going to be an economic.
And we need that. We need the 2026 economic crash, and then we're going to rebuild it. The best way to rebuild an economic crash between two countries, because China also has economic issues, is to pretend, we got war, let's build some, and then we need hypersonic missiles. We still need big, beautiful ships and subs that go deeper than anyone else's. Boots on the ground from a senior airman in the United States Air Force. I work maintenance on B-52s, and you guys are talking about China on the last episode. I have some insight on what they tell us about the upcoming conflict. We made new aircraft maintenance units, also known as AMUs, that are now bomber generation squadrons with the intent to have them ready to go as quickly as possible for upcoming missions and conflicts. On China, they tell us constantly to stay ready for the upcoming conflict, that it will be sooner rather than later. We are sending birds all over the world as an act of deterrence. We are expecting sometime between 25-26 to start a conflict, as they believe that China will take Taiwan soon, since they have a lowering birth rate and the population is diminishing and the time to act is now. Next, boots on the ground, Lockheed Martin. Sitting here in real time at my Lockheed Martin all hands meeting. Same guy I mentioned in my last boots on the ground correspondence was on stage. Same China warning. A new face is on the stage now, decorated female Marine heavy lift pilot. She is going deep on the China rhetoric, pushing heavy Marine recruitment goals to be ready for, wait for it, 2027 China issues. It's far from behind the scenes now, out in the open, and the Trump appointments line up with this perfectly. I do believe, he says, you guys nailed this one. This is a setup. And to me, and I think you probably agree, China's in on it. We're not going to blow up China. They're not going to blow up America. We need each other. We're mutually beneficial. And certainly in how are we going to dig ourselves out of this economic problem we have? Well, we need something to build. I'm not going to build computers. I mean, we'll build computers, but
the problem with computers is they're naturally cheaper as time goes by.
Yeah, you need
it's a deflationary product. Yes, it's no good.
You need hypersonic missiles, and it's going to be great. It's going to be great. And by the way, I think that Colorado. Now, did Colorado vote completely Democrat as expected?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Colorado, you're out of the game.
With a second Trump term comes a renewed fight over a permanent headquarters for U.S. Space Command. Alabama Congressman Mike Rogers telling his home state on a radio talk show Monday he expects the president-elect to order Space Command to relocate from Colorado Springs to Huntsville as soon as he takes office.
And I think you'll see in the first week that he's in office, he'll sign an executive order reversing Biden's direction, and we will start construction next year in Huntsville.
Those comments reigniting the years-long fight over the command's permanent home. U.S. Senator John Hickenlooper saying Colorado Springs is the best place for Space Command because it's already at work here. Congressman Doug Lamborn raising security concerns, quote, as the world becomes more dangerous, we cannot afford afford any lapse in combat readiness. The Colorado Springs Chamber estimates the area would lose out on $450 million annually.
Serves you right, Colorado.
And by the way, this is not a new phenomenon. This is what Bill Clinton did to Texas.
Yep.
When he pulled the super collider, which was probably almost 10 minutes from being finished. Yeah. Monstrous product that would have it was essentially CERN that we would have here in the United States. And he just pulled the plug on it because Texas voted Republican.
I'm going to take the lead on the last two controversial or interesting appointments. This would be Senator Marco Rubio as Secretary of State and this Waltz character who will be Director of National Intelligence. This clip says it all.
I want to start this evening with CNN's Jim Sciutto, who is joining me on the phone on this breaking news. Jim, I just want to first get your take on hearing that it doesn't appear this is formal yet, but if Trump is leaning in this direction, and that is what all of our sourcing is indicating at this hour, what the significance of a Marco Rubio as a Trump pick for Secretary of State would be in your view?
For one, it very much, Caitlin, puts China at the center of Trump's foreign policy. The combination of Rubio and Waltz, both of whom are big China hawks. Rubio's portfolio on China goes back years. He's drawn attention to China's trade practices. He's pushed for restrictions on selling advanced technology to China. He's highlighted China's mass incarceration and forced labor of Uyghurs in Xinjiang, as well as China's intelligence gathering inside this country. So he has a deep and long resume on China. And listen, it shouldn't be surprising, given that Trump himself, of course, has made China a target both of his national security policy, but also his economic policy. The discussions during the campaign of imposing significant tariffs on Chinese goods. This would bring to his team a Rubio and a Waltz, two individuals with history there and focus on China.
Is it becoming clear to everybody what's going on? We can predict everything. We can predict it all. We've been doing this. China. It's China. And that's why Rubio is chosen. He's perfect. And if he gets out of line, hey, Marco, what's that in your mouth? We know you were a dancer.
Yeah, he's probably got plenty of photos.
We know you were a dancer. Dancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any more thoughts on those?
No, I think that there was another angle to this, which is the which I did bring up in the newsletter. I think I said it pretty succinctly there, which is Cenk Uygur's thesis.
What was that again?
With Cenk, it's not that I listen to his show all the time, but I have to say his ranting recently has been quite entertaining. And he claims that Rubio and Waltz and one other person were all put in because there were Israel hawks. And it was at the behest of the huge amount of money that was invested into the Trump campaign by Miriam Adelson.
Ah, yeah, yeah. I do remember that now. Yes.
And so he says that no one's talking about that. And these picks had to pick some Israel, pro-Israel hawks to assuage her. Now, I don't like this Waltz guy.
What's his first
Rubio,
name
Rubio, I think you're what's, right. What's Rubio's his... controllable because of the photos.
What's Waltz's first name?
Mike?
I think it's Mike, yeah. Okay.
He is a... He's like the Holman type guy. He's a grumpy-looking prick who... I have mixed feelings about, so I'm not a big fan of his. But again, it's like if he's going to be the director of, he's not the DNI, he's the security.
Tulsi's DNI and he's the national security advisor? Is that the idea?
Yeah, he's national security advisor.
National security advisor is usually a spook. My uncle was national security advisor to Bush.
Yeah. Well, they have spooky. Job. They're very spooky in some way or other. That's for sure.
It's a spook job.
And so this guy, and he, I think he was a spook. And then you have the, then we have the C, the guy they're going to head up the CIA, who is another guy I don't care for, who was the old DNI guy. And we might as well discuss Tulsi as the DNI person. I think that's a good pick. But then again, definitely. She's got to have be a. She's suspicious.
I like Tulsi.
Everybody likes Tulsi. That makes it even better. I mean, nobody doesn't like her.
Yeah, that's good. It's not like Bolton. I mean, Bolton was creepy. At least Tulsi's, we like her. You know, Tulsi, she's great.
What was Bolton's job?
I thought he was an...
No, I don't think so. I think it was just a dipshit.
Dipshit in the White
charge
House.
Or something or other.
I'm a DIW. What's that? Yeah. Dipshit in the White House?
Yeah.
To give some credence to your 2026 prediction.
There's new evidence that Americans are drowning in debt. Credit card balances hit a new record high between July and September, more than $1 trillion. And total household debt, which includes credit cards, student and car loans and mortgages, also broke a record. On the bright side, wages are now rising at a faster pace than debt.
So things aren't all that great yet. And... what you think may be the catalyst is, of course, a major part of Trump's appeal to some technology sectors, including myself.
Bitcoin is nearing $90,000. In fact, it's up about 30% since November 5th. Traders are betting on Trump's promises to be a crypto president by lowering regulation and ushering in a crypto-friendly Congress. Reporter Hannah Lang has been looking into what kinds of changes the industry expects from the new administration.
The crypto industry is broadly expecting that the Trump administration will be more lax on enforcement and overall take a very different approach than the current SEC, where they claim that most crypto tokens are securities and need to be registered as such and provide disclosures to investors. The crypto industry disagrees with that sentiment. So they claim that they had difficulty really lifting crypto into the mainstream because of some of the guardrails in place. So there are some people in the industry that are hopeful that with the Republican majority in the Senate and probably the House as well, it really enables legislation to be passed through reconciliation, where you could see a crypto bill kind of tacked onto a larger spending or tax bill that could pass kind of in a fast-tracked way with a simple majority.
So since the election, Bitcoin actually blew through 93,000, hit 94,000, is back down again, I think somewhere high 87. I did reach out to the former New York banker, a skeptic of Bitcoin, and I said, how about that Bitcoin? His reply... The more real it gets, the sooner they will crush it. Okay.
He's probably, that's an interesting take. Yeah.
Just giving you the inside info. You know, I'm biased, but.
Crush it.
He said, crush, they will crush it. So.
Well, you know, I'm still waiting for Goldman Sachs to collapse. I think he had that on his list too, and that was a couple of years ago. Yeah. Been waiting.
No, I think I still have a feeling that Trump's love of the stable coin. That is his way of printing money. Because if I understand how the stable coin works, the Tether is probably the biggest, USDT is the biggest stable coin now, and or the biggest buyer of treasuries and other debt instruments to back their stable coin, which is one for one with the US dollar. And it's a great way to print money. It's like,
whatever works.
You guys, if you just buy our debt, and then turn that into dollars that we can use digitally. And that's what I expect Elon to use. I expect him to use stablecoin, not Doge.
Doge.
I think he'll use a stablecoin. I think there's a real pot. And that is an interesting thing that is not being discussed, an interesting strategy to print up more money on top of money you already printed without it really being printing money somehow, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so good luck.
Well, thank you.
Print.
Thank you. Well, that's always been your theory. We need to print more.
I've never said that.
In the past on this show, you've said, we should print hundreds of billions of dollars. Yes, you have.
Well, somebody out there find a clip of me saying exactly what he said. No, I don't think so.
What do you think you said?
What do I never said anything along these lines. I played the clip where Milton Friedman goes on and on about how they stopped the inflation during the Civil War in some areas where they're just printing money. They just stopped the presses and everything calmed down.
My recollection is that in
you want to hear what you want to hear.
Okay. I guess I have another quest. I just have recollections of you saying that you thought we should be printing a lot more money. Maybe
I don't recall it saying that myself.
Yeah.
A pretty good recollection of crazy comments.
Okay. Well, people, bingit.io, everybody. It's out there somewhere.
Get to work.
I will accept if I'm wrong. That is, yes, I may have discussed
the modern monetary theory and threw that in as an overall comment, but it's nothing I'd recommend.
Okay.
But I years ago, we discussed MMT, which was a big thing at the time. And luckily, that's gone by the wayside.
No, I just...
Unless you like high price, it's $5 a gallon. Wait, well, what did I say? $6 a gallon gasoline, which is going to go up in California.
I know. I'm baffled because I thought that was still kind of your idea that we should have been printing a lot more money. I don't know why I think that.
You hate me.
No, I love you. That's not true. You know that. Why would I hate you? Without you, I'm nothing.
I have cash too, which makes it even worse. I hold cash.
I have Bitcoin, so.
I still think you'd have been better off with gold.
No, my gold bar got taken away a long time ago.
If you still had it.
I have coins. I got Krugerrands.
Krugerrand. Wow. There you go. There's a shot from the bow of the past.
And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courage. Say in the morning to you, the man who put the sea in China. Say hello to my friend on the other end, who I do love. It's John C.
Ram, Korean, Mary, Shift, Sea, Boots on Ground, Feet in the Air, Subs in the Water, Dames and Nights out there.
In the morning to the trolls. So we should be at 1800 for a Thursday. Is that correct? Is that what I'm?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
2196. So we're just shy of 22. So we're almost 400 above the average troll rate. And you know why?
No, why?
Because people want to hear our opinion.
You know, they always want to hear our opinions, but why today? I mean, opinion, we did kind of...
Well, it's obvious, because everyone's talking out of their butthole all over the place.
That's for sure.
That's all you hear. That is the culture war economy is in high gear. Everybody has opinions on everything. Whoa, we shouldn't have this gadget. John Thune, Rhino.
John Thune.
Everyone's all...
Should have been Rick Scott.
No, we just try to keep calm, carry on, see what's going on. It's okay. Remember, after the show is over, go outside. It's beautiful outside. At least here in Texas, go smell some fresh air. It's America.
Get some fresh air.
There is a feeling of freedom in the air, John. A feeling of freedom. Yes.
Well, if you go outside.
Yeah. Yes, that's where the freedom is. You can smell it. In Texas, it smells like freedom everywhere. How does it smell in California? Do you smell freedom in the air?
No, I don't smell anything in the air. It's clean. It's ocean spray.
Cranberry. Mmm, my favorite. Hey, those trolls are in the troll room, trollroom.io. They listen live on the stream. What are you drinking? I heard you crack it.
I didn't know. It was me moving the mic.
Oh, I thought you. I thought I heard carbonation escaping.
Well, I can tell you in advance, so it's going to be a polar.
A polar.
Yes. Premium seltzer.
Boring polar. Do something fresh. Do something new.
Well, I had the day trip stuff. And nobody cared.
A lot of people are listening on modern podcast apps. You will need this. You will need this because, well, you know, by the way, bonus clip. I have a bonus clip here. Where's my bonus clip? So podcasting is still open and free and available, thanks to the work of hundreds of developers.
Developers.
That's right. They've all tapped into podcastindex.org so that your favorite show will not go away. And of course, there's consolidation happening once again in the podcast industry. And I think, I think I can tell you what the strategy is here, but we'll play this 45-second clip, and it comes from Spotify.
First, let's start with Spotify. Take an aim at YouTube. They want to be the place where you watch video podcasts. The company held their annual Now Playing event and announced two big moves. First, it will start paying podcast creators who get lots of views.
What?
And it will let paying subscribers watch video podcasts without ads. But keep in mind, that does not include what's called host reads. Those are the ads that hosts read themselves that are built into the shows. Now, according to Edison Research, YouTube is the top place for podcasts. With 31% of weekly listeners, Spotify has 27%. Apple Podcasts, surprise to me, 15% share. Video podcasts are particularly popular and continue to grow.
Cheap production.
Yeah, right? That's exactly what it's all about.
So this report is bullshit. So they mix up metaphors of, oh, most people listen to podcasts on YouTube and then listen on Spotify. People listen to podcasts. The number one is still Apple, where they actually listen. When you have Spotify courting podcasters to do video, well, boy, we need more of that, to do video and then pay them. That's an ad-based strategy. This is how people get deplatformed. And when you upload video, they disconnect your video from your RSS feed. This is very important for people to understand.
So, what?
So, never mind, I guess. So you will have no control over your feed, no control over your broadcast mechanism. This is a bad idea. The same with YouTube. Your favorite YouTube podcasters will go away when advertisers start complaining again. So
it is a cycle.
Of course it's a cycle. And we'll go through it again, and we'll still be here. Our little podcast will still be here.
We'll still be here doing what we do.
Yeah,
our complaining host... about not enough donations.
We'll be doing host reads for Linda Lupatkin.
But we're not doing host reads ever. Well, we do for Linda Lupatkin, but that's not really a host read. We're just reading the donation note.
Yeah, Eli the coffee guy. Exactly.
Yeah, and they're what they're doing is they're gaming the system.
Yep.
And getting away with it, because the promise is that if you write a note, we will cut it down if it's ridiculously long, but if you write a note and your donation's over $200, we will read the note. And if the note happens to be promotional toward the company or person that provided the money, but so be it. But it's not like that we put a time aside in the middle of the show and go on and on about some product.
We don't have meetings.
Greatest thing ever.
We don't have meetings about your read.
And we don't, exactly. You get what you get.
I didn't like your read.
Yeah, nobody can do that. It's like you can't read. It depends on the day. I mean, sometimes you know, I mumble. I don't have my enunciations not correct because I didn't get enough sleep. Who cares? You're coughing all the time like today.
I am coughing today. That's the freedom in the air. I'm breathing in too much freedom. It's making me cough. So, yes, get a modern podcast app, podcastapps.com. And remember that we are value for value. This 17 years, we're still here. Value for value is where it's at. Yeah, okay. So we don't get Rogan money. We don't even get a set built for us like Call Her Daddy podcast, as Chris Cuomo said. But you know what? We have our integrity, John. I can just see you.
Whatever that's worth.
I can see you rolling your eyes.
Well, integrity, yeah.
Integrity. We're doing
the difference between us and them is we're a public service.
Yes, we serve the people. We do, and unlike NPR, we're not in a bundle, not a plus bundle. No, we're just there. We're there on the feed. You can get it however you want. We don't care. Copy it. Send it to other people. People used to put it. You know, we had Ramsey. He used to put shows on CDs and pass them out everywhere. Now people are like, what's this?
What's this thing?
What am I going to do with this thing? I still have boxes in the garage of No Agenda CDs.
You could throw these. They would make nice Frisbees. You know, there was some football team, and I'm trying to think which one it is, because I saw the game. I didn't realize they did this, but it's one of the southern team, one of the teams in Texas.
Yeah.
And when the team comes out, the football team comes out on the field, everybody throws tacos. Or not tacos, but tortillas.
Really?
Because the tortilla will fly like a Frisbee if you toss it just right. And so all of a sudden, all these tortillas are flying all over the place. All over the field.
Cool. That's kind of cool.
It's really funny.
Is that the Texas Tacos, that team?
No, it's not the Texas Longhorns. I don't think it's Texas Tech. I'm not sure which team it is, but it's one of these teams.
I'll find
somebody in the troll room might, if they're football fans, would know.
Troll room is not so helpful. They're funny.
They're not very. You know, they're not sport. I mean, they're at home. They're shut-ins. Many of them don't know what football is.
Well, so we had a football segment on the previous episode, which was about football, i.e., soccer in America. And I was questioning why this Tel Aviv team was playing Amsterdam. And it turns out there is a big tournament. There is a big UEFA Cup or whatever. But no, and I keep my eye on the troll room. Like, anyone saying anything? Nothing.
That's because nobody cares about soccer.
But then they'll send me emails. You don't know what you're talking about. You sound like an idiot. and on Twitter, Hey Curry. Dude, my name's Adam. Where were you? You can just give me information. I'm happy to correct it. People get like,
that same guy.
It is really only one person who does it over and over and over again. By the way, JCD calling anyone a shut-in is pot meat kettle. I don't know. I'm just reading. They're trolling. They're trolling today.
Burn me.
Burn. So part of the value for value, actually, there's three parts to it: time, talent, and treasure. We appreciate all three of those, no matter how you can support the show. It is great when you promote the show. It is great when you support it through your treasure. It's fantastic if you can do something to help us out. I had a back and forth with Tante Neil, one of our Dutch masters, because we're going to talk about the art in a moment. And she confirmed my worst fear. She said, I am reluctant to submit anymore because all the art looks so slick. She's a top winner in our list of artists.
Yeah, she's one of the top winners.
And so she hasn't submitted for a while. And she says, well, because I look at the art page and it's all so slick and I can't do stuff that fast. And so I figure I'll never win. And I wanted to assure our Dutch masters particularly that it's not about slick. Slick is not what wins with No Agenda. Look at us. Slick is not what wins.
No, slick is no good.
No, slick sucks.
You know why?
Why?
Because it's slick.
Yes. We want.
It's a known fact, especially in the modern era.
We want slick as slop. There you go. We want humor. You know, and Tante Neil is one of those artists who gets us, and she gets the humor, and she gets the humor of the show.
Yes, she can be quite amusing.
Now, I am there in this thread. There were some conversations going on. I said, well, you know, I use it as a tool, so I can do part of this, and you know, use some AI for this and some AI for the. Yeah, that's fair, but still, slick does not beat out a great conceit, as we used to say in the business. Which I thought was just concept in a snooty way, but the conceit of the art. So that's what we're looking for. And we didn't really have great conceit on the last episode. We chose Coob the Boob's No Agenda Wastebuster, obviously AI, except maybe for the letters. AI is not very good if you say, put No Agenda in a piece of art. It comes up with the oddest things, at least the AIs that I've used. I don't really care. So we wound up with the No Agenda Waste Bus. It was a pretty piece, but it
was a little cheesecakey. It was okay.
But if you looked at everything, if we just go down the list of what was there,
it was a bad submissions show. The submissions were not, nobody had any, nothing was triggered. Artists need to be triggered. Oh, I have an idea. they need that kind of triggering, and I guess the show did not provide it.
It's our problem now? We're at fault? Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I honestly do.
Well, no, there were people got the triggers like the demilitarized zone, but that was just conscious bloggers. Stop with the round pieces of art. We're not going to do them. Oh, Trump on the phone. Oh, that's great. No agenda.
I would say Trump on the phone is pretty lame.
Yeah, it's the lamest of all.
What is the point?
Yeah, and then
why bother submitting it?
Yeah, you're just vomiting AI slop everywhere. You know, we hesitated for a moment on Scaramanga's reserve for my Trump voting husband, but at this point we're like, eh.
And by the way, wait, Trump on the phone. This is like an old landline phone. Trump's got cell phones. He knows how to use them.
Yeah, but see, then he puts the title in on the phone with Zelensky. Oh, so should I put that underneath so people understand the art? This is a piece of art of Trump on the phone with Zelensky. Ha, 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 ha. Can you tell
me? Now, the piece I used for the newsletter was the giant elephant and the small donkey.
Yeah.
Done by Clip Custodian.
Yeah.
Now, that's totally AI.
Yes. It's political.
Completely.
It's a little too political for me, but I can see.
I liked it. It was political, but, you know, we're a political show in many ways, and that was a political piece of art. It was different. It has a nice look to
we're
it.
We're a comedy show.
I like
show.
The elephant.
It's we're a comedy show. Where did you get political from?
Political comedy.
Oh, okay. So anyway, Coob the Boob he's tried a couple of submissions. First time for Coob. Coob the Boob, thank you. It was a pretty piece. It just had a nostalgia to it. I'm not quite sure what the pill is that she's holding on to there.
Yes, we discussed this pill. What is this pill?
Is that the waste buster? Is that how it is? I don't know.
Pill? Is it Wegovy? I mean,
didn't quite understand. I'm just looking at the art now. Plenty of time to win.
Plenty. Yeah, the stuff we have so far is nothing good.
Although the farmer's wife is pretty good. You see that?
No, farmer's. I don't see the farmer's wife.
It's the second row on the right. It's literally a picture of a piece of paper with a drawing on it.
Oh, yes.
See, that's what I'm talking about. It says, make art great again. Yes.
Yeah, that's a nice piece. I agree. Yeah.
But it's still up for grabs. It's way up for grabs.
Yeah, in other words, we're not picking it.
No. NoAgendaArtGenerator.com is where you go to submit. We appreciate all of the art that everybody submits, whether you're a prompt jockey or not. We appreciate you trying it. That's always helpful. Seriously. We love you for that. Now, the people we love who are executive and associate executive producers, we love everybody who sends us a treasure, obviously. It's highly appreciated. Keeps us going, keeps us paying the bills. Now, we try to keep costs low. We don't have camera people so that we can be on Spotify. We're editors. Oh, then you got to edit the video. We got to do post on the video. Can you imagine?
And that show never yet.
And then you got to look at us. Who wants to see me with my Tourette's and God knows what you look like these days?
I look like hell.
I haven't seen you in 10 years. I have no idea what you look like. So we'll thank everybody $50 and above, and we always suggest and recommend that people get a sustaining donation going. In fact, we have a layaway knight today who's, I think, has been doing $4 a month or something for a long time. So you will get recognized. You can do any amount, any frequency you want to. Just support the show. Keep it going. If you appreciate what we do and you get value from it, send some value back. Now, we like to name our executive and associate executive producers in this portion of the segment because it's like Hollywood. And we have an instant benefit there, which is a Hollywood credit. Good Anywhere credits are recognized, including IMDb.com. And so it's $200 and above. You're an associate executive producer, forever credit. We read your note. $300 and above, an executive producer. We read your note and you get that credit forever. Rick Bunch kicks in with 1202.02, which he says, ducks and eggs with a Trump bump for Adam. Father of podcasts, godfather of elections. I guess I am Sir Ricky Bobby of the land of many wives now. I wish health karma for all No Agenda listeners and for Splash Cadillac to deduce himself. So we don't deduce him, right? Splash Cadillac has to do that himself now, right?
I guess.
Okay. So, oops. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sorry. Here you go. Here's your karma, brother. Health.
You've got karma.
Craig Allen's up, Sir Craig Allen, 103.0.26 in the morning, John and Adam. Today's my birthday. I wanted to treat myself to a Doctor of Education diploma in the climate change studies and the level up. Thanks for the twice weekly infosainment. That's a good one. This is infosainment.
Infosainment.
Birthday and life stability karma. Sir Commodore / soon to be Baronet Craig Allen of the Gila River.
All right. Here's your karma, brother.
You've got karma.
Zimbabwe comes in with 333.33. Says, sorry, it's been a while. Had a few health issues. It's okay. That's the beauty. You can donate whenever it works out for you. Hope all is well. It is. And that the next 4 years will be glorious. Anyway, I just sent 333.33 by wire, as on previous occasions. Thank you for everything you both do. Warmly, by the way, Zimbabwe, possibly Archduke by now of Shotzi land, plus the land of Mr. Arnold and Archduchess, possibly Marianne Schneeberger, my inspiration and guiding soul every day. God bless and power to the people. Love is lit once more. Zimbabwe.
Anonymous Fed. He's probably an anonymous Fed.
I'm thinking.
He's in Holland, Michigan, of all places, and he's came in with 333.33, and he says, greetings from an anonymous Fed. Donating because my keeper outed me as a douchebag to Adam.
Oh.
Thanks for the hyper-local podcasting info and primer. Long-time listener and looking forward to my future knighthood. Signed, D2N, Delta 2, November.
Very nice. Yeah, about 70 people have asked me for the local podcast primer. It's been pretty overwhelming feedback. Sir Don Keel, Viscount of New Hampshire, checks in with a typed note. Hey, guys. Actually says, hey, Guz. He forgot the Y. Hey, Guz. We should just use that. Hey, Guz. How you doing, Guz? It's like guys and cuz put together. Hey, guys, in spite of being a Viscount, this will be my first executive producer donation ever at 333.33. So please give me a 333.33 jingle, typically reserved for a Rubbleizer donation, but you have been around, so yes.
India, Tango, Mike, stand by. 33, 33, 33. Rubbleizer out.
And he continues, I wanted to thank you for your public service and keeping me sane up to the elections. You were confident of the Trump win, but I had my doubts. I feel a great weight lifted from my shoulders, and my confidence in the American people has been reestablished. Smell the freedom in the air. Ah, there it is. I heard it open. Again, thank you for what you do, Sir Don Keel, Viscount of New Hampshire. Thank you, Sir Don Keel.
And you may read the next one, too, which is blowed out my spreadsheet to the extreme. I can't read it. Too much, too long, too big.
Yeah, Sir Darius, I will have to chop this down a little bit. He says, in the morning, thank you for your courage and for your patience with me and my brief missive.
Brief.
Whilst re-upping my premium subscription, I wanted to humbly request and pray that Gitmo Nation, God bless us all, show up and show out at my apparel brand War and Tees site. That's War N, no, letter N, Tees.com. War and Tees.com, which the Podfather, sorry.
Cute, I says cute.
Yes, which the Podfather will prayerfully link to my name in the credits, as well as give me R2-D2 biz karma for. Was laid off this morning from my electrical engineering job at a solar farm. Just as ridiculous as it sounds, he says. Boots on the ground to follow immediately. And then he says, read as much as possible. Now, we know this, Sir Darius, as he also... published the book, which is a very nice book, called what is the name of his book now? I'm trying to find it in this note. Do you see the name of it? It's a picture book that he did.
I can't see anything because this thing is too big for my spreadsheet.
Yeah. Oh man, where it's probably on warranties.com. He's an Iraqi vet, and he was there, and he took a lot of pictures, put it into a book. Excuse me, beautiful piece of work.
Yes,
we both have a copy of this.
Yeah, book. We have copies. It's a great book.
So go to warranties.com and help a brother out. Sir Darius from Essex in Maryland, and that is an associate executive producership for him. Not the first one, because he's a sir. 242.42, and give him some karma as requested.
You've got karma.
So here we have Eli the Goffy guy.
The Goffy guy.
He's a Goff.
He's a Goff, the Goffy guy.
Eli the Coffee guy in Bensonville, Illinois, 211-14, and he has an interesting note. I was flipping the radio channels and came across an NPR segment with a psychologist who was counseling listeners on how to deal with their mental trauma stemming from the election. I expect the next few days to be a target-rich environment for the show. Mm-hmm. And then he wants the jingles, Eating the Dogs, Orange Man, Four More Years. Make coffee, make mornings great again, he says. Visit GigawattCoffeeRoasters.com and use the code ITM for 20% off your order. Stay caffeinated, Eli the Coffee Guy.
Yes, hold on a second. He needed the four more years ahead in that one. Okay.
They're eating the dogs.
Orange!
Four more years!
All right, we're awake now. No coffee needed. Kenneth Casper, New Braunfels, Texas, 201.24, and he also sent in a note. Hello, John and Adam. Thank you for all your hard work. I have a Texit update after this most recent election. Texit, that's the Texit, Texas exiting the union. I'm happy to announce that we gained 10 Texit-supporting seats in the Texas House. Uh-oh. These 10 state reps have pledged to submit legislation in the upcoming session that would allow Texans the opportunity to vote on the question of separation from the federal government. Texit is a process, and this is one more step in the right direction. The Trump win is comforting as it buys us a little more time. God is showing us his mercy and patience. A call out to all Texas listeners. If you want to help or are interested in the progress, you can check us out on the web at tnm.me, tangonovembermike.me. Kenneth R. Casper, New Braunfels, Texas Nationalist Movement. And as a jingle, he'd like some Al Sharpton.
ESPICT.
I'm good with that. I'm good with the Texas. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I think I'm good with it too. I think Texas should leave.
Yeah.
Linda Lupatkin in Lakewood, Colorado, $200, and she writes, "Jobs Karma. For a faster, more effective job search, visit ImageMakersInc.com. That's ImageMakersInc with a K. And that's your go-to executive resumes. It's your go-to for executive resumes and job search. And work with Linda Lou, Duchess of Jobs." And writer of resumes.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
And finally on the list, Frank Laura from Milford, Michigan. $200 associate executive producer title for you, Frank. Thank you for the dedication over these past 17 plus years. You're pioneers in the new media that is bringing truth back to journalism. By don't we just have to do... great questions.
Yeah, we ask great
questions. By holding the so-called journalists accountable. No karma, but please, I got ants. Okay. A great question for a great jingle. Here you go, Frank.
I got ants. I got ants.
You've got karma.
You got ants, you got karma.
That's right. And that concludes our executive and associate executive producers for episode 1712. 12? Yes. 1712. Yes. Wow. That's a lot of episodes in our 17th year. Ah, the number 7 is just cropping up everywhere. Thank you to these executive and associate executive producers. You get your credits and you can use them anywhere as earlier discussed. And we'll be thanking everybody $50 and above in our second segment. And again, thank you to everyone who supports us with sustaining donations. Get one of your own. Go to noagendadonations.com. And again, thank you for producing episode 1712.
Our formula is this. We go out. We hit people in the mouth.
Order.
Shut up, slave.
Shut up, slave.
I have a small, if it's okay, a small presentation, which is kind of a quest for our producers to help us out with this, with some boots on the ground.
I'd be interested.
So you recall the story, I don't think we did anything about it, maybe we played a clip, about the FEMA worker who had sent text messages, avoid all the houses with the Trump flags.
Yes.
Did we play a clip of that? Did we play any clip?
I think so. But the thing is, now that you mentioned it, I had a clip I could have captured, and I didn't watch the show to do it, but I'm going to go back and get it. She came on to one of the Fox shows, and I didn't get a clip of it.
Right. Well, I saw her on the Roland Martin podcast. I can't believe I watched the Roland Martin podcast, but I saw a clip and it kind of caught my eye. And then I said, let me listen. She seemed like a very reasonable person. Let me see what is going on. So the story, as it was told, is FEMA workers were ignoring any home in Florida, I think it was, during the hurricane that had a Trump flag. And this is an outrage. And, of course, it was presented as director of FEMA. I don't know if it was the director of FEMA. So she is on the Roland Martin podcast. And there's three entities that are going to be discussed. I'm going to try and set this up. One is FEMA itself. One is the company that she works for in her civilian life called Avernath. We'll get to that. And the third is as of this moment for me, unknown entity, which is a contractor to FEMA who actually sends people like her out into the field. So what I quickly realize as I'm listening to this interview, and again, she seemed very reasonable and she seemed quite hurt by what had happened, is that these FEMA people, of which she is one, they are not rushing in with, to save you, or, they are literally only there to take your name and address and to register you. So this is not like a FEMA rescue worker coming in with a backhoe and digging you out or anything like that. This is a group of people who are called up, sent out to go on at some point, I think she called it canvassing, which was kind of odd. I don't know if that happened in the clip, but to register you possibly so you can get your $750. They don't have any police protection. They just go from door to door and say, how many people live here? Are you okay? What do you need? Do you need money? What's the situation? Kind of looks at the scenario. And so what happens is, and she actually said that this has happened in the past with like Biden signs. So it's not necessarily Trump, but a lot of people are like, what are you here? Why do you want my name and address? Get out of here, you government shill. And that can get kind of heated. And so they are told by their supervisors who work for this third company who supposedly then take that information and give it to FEMA. I'm not quite sure why. It's very typical. This is something for Vivek and Elon. Let's get rid of these consultants or these contracting firms in the middle who are just get FEMA out there, please. If you're walking up a street and, there's three houses in a row, they're like, get out of here, drain the swamp, all kinds of stuff like that. Then they're like, okay, we mark that down and we say, this is not a good street to go on. The people are hostile. And in some cases, it would be in the past, there would be some political signs. It could just be a whole street. Or as she is required to write down, the people with Trump signs are not very friendly to us. So here's the first clip of this woman with, and she's been fired from FEMA. And she's also been fired from her civilian job.
I was notified after I demobbed. The next morning, they told me verbally I was fired, but they never provided me anything in writing stating that I was fired. They all alleged that these actions were made on my own recognizance and that it was for my own political advances. However, if you look at the record, there is what we call a community trend. And unfortunately, it just so happened that the political hostility that was encountered by my team, and I was on two different teams during this deployment, they just so happened to have the Trump campaign signage. FEMA always preaches avoidance first and then de-escalation. So this is not isolated. This is a colossal event of avoidance, not just in the state of Florida, but you will find avoidance in the Carolinas. Senior leadership will lie to you and tell you that they do not know. But if you ask the DSA crew leads and specialists what they are experiencing in the field, they will tell you. Demand for FEMA to give you those incident reports. They will substantiate what is happening to us in the field.
It's interesting to see the trolls already saying, she's a Democrat idiot. No, no, something else is going on here. And here is, again, her explaining, listen carefully, it's only a minute, what she is actually doing and who else is doing this registering.
So, okay, so you said, so explain what this chart here is. So you sent us this map and it has these dots on it. So what does this actually mean?
So what that means is that shows you every home in that area. Each dot is a home.
Okay.
And that home, that dot gives you intel of if I was able to register that person, if I was only giving them resources, if I wasn't able to access the process, the property. There's all kind of things on in that data for that one dot. So when someone says that, oh, there was at least 20 homes missed, or we didn't do this, or we didn't do that. We have to put that into context because this was a breach from a partnering company that FEMA hired, the surge capacity team, which are usually just TSA workers. They took it upon themselves to say, we want to go and register these homes, knowing that it is hostile and it could possibly endanger the rest of the team. So because they didn't get what they wanted, they went and sent this information out and misled the people that we just bypassed these homes. We omitted these homes for safety precautions, not because of political play. Like, no one cares about that. We want to make sure people can register.
So this is where I got interested. I'm like, really? So FEMA sends contracts another company, which apparently also contracts TSA employees. So you already know what level you need. These are not people coming to save you. These are people to do a very specific task, as she says, registering, getting data. These dots represent data on these homes. And that data does not go directly to FEMA. It goes to this third party, and they are the ones who leaked out this information about her and basically put it on her. And as I heard about her actual job, things started to come into view.
At home, I have a regular job like everyone else. I have an executive position. I take care of things there for that job. I'm in contract with them on their terms. And then for FEMA, I work as a reservist. So my time for them is on call based on deployments, orders that I receive.
So not only were you fired from FEMA, your civilian, so your other job with Avanath, you've been fired from that job too.
They actually did that in writing, yes.
Right. First of all, what kind of company is this? I've never heard of it. What kind of company is it?
It is a property management company. They are nationwide. I am a regional manager. Well, I was a regional manager for that property. I took care of their portfolios for various different acquisitions within it. This is all because of FEMA's doing. They allowed a partnering company to leak internal communication and then relinquish all of my personal contact information. So FEMA didn't just jeopardize me. They also put my own company that I work for at home in jeopardy because all this information's on LinkedIn.
Okay. So now I'm thinking, what exactly is this company that she works for? It's not really a property management company in the traditional sense of the word. It is Avanath Kappa. Excuse me. That's
your cough
it's
switch.
Freedom. I wanted to make sure you knew what I was doing. It's freedom in the air. Avanath Capital Management. They raise hundreds of millions of dollars to go out and buy properties. They specialize in something that I'd never heard before, and this is where I want producers who actually know about this stuff to help us. Something called NOAH, N-O-A-H. This is an acronym for Naturally Occurring Affordable Housing. So Natural Occurring Affordable Housing is housing that these guys buy up, particularly when these properties have been flooded. And then they turn them into Section 8 housing, or they can just make it very low rent for a so-called affordable housing. Once you have the affordable housing, then you can get all kinds of zoning done with local governments. And my assertion is that this company in the middle is in the job of, in the business of taking this data. And I'm not sure exactly what she registered, probably the state of the home, the state of the damage, how many people are living there. Maybe she gets some information, how much they make, how many people live there. I think the reason why they put it all on her is because there's a scam going on here where this company in the middle gets the data, sends it off to Avanath. Because she knows how to do this. She knows how to assess properties and what properties are what damage there is, etc. And I think there is some kind of scam going on with this company in the middle that gets this data and then helps these guys go target their acquisitions. I don't know for sure, but I'd never heard of naturally occurring affordable housing. And just my spidey sense went tingling like crazy. So if anybody has any information, I would love to hear about it.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? And we're talking $675 million, their last capital raise, to go and buy stuff. Well, isn't that a coincidence that you've got
a coinky ding?
Yes, that you've got all these properties that have been flooded. They send out people who know how to assess these properties, not save you. No, they go out to assess properties. Here's $750. Let me get some information from you. So if anyone knows, and there's a lot of angry people about this whole NOAA stuff, that it really is some kind of real estate scam, and you know these guys are an investment company. They're not a management. No. Avanath takes a holistic approach to its strategy of acquiring and redeveloping affordable workforce and primary rental housing. In addition to investing in the physical assets, Avanath invests in community-based services and activities, blah, 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 blah. But then if you go look at the, the NOAA part. Avanath concentrates on these rental sectors: affordable housing, tax credit, project-based, Section 8, and other rent-restricted properties, generally targeting residents at 40% to 80% of area median income, and naturally occurring affordable housing, which is not it's just an acronym. It's not a government acronym, as far as I can tell, which are properties that upgraded to serve the needs of affordable residents. But how does something become naturally occurring? Well, typically by flood. Anyway, That's all I've got, and I hope we have some.
Well, I don't think you have to hope too much.
What do you mean? I have a lot of hope. I have a lot of faith in our producers.
No, we have. So I said we have someone that's very knowledgeable about this that listens to this show.
Oh,
and they're gonna say, "Oh yeah, this has been going on," and they'll have the dad. This is 1953 when Eisenhower did this. It'll be something like that. It'll be like, "What are you talking about? What? How dumb are you?" That's the way it always comes out.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. It just everything about me went, "Oh, this stinks." Because, you know, the vision we were given is, look at this horrible person. She hates Trump. She's black. She hates Trump. And she just wanted to skip all the Trump
exactly
homes.
Right. You're that's exactly the impression that you got from the social media.
And it seems purposeful because of this company leaked her information.
Rile people up. I don't think it was anything to cover up anything.
No.
How about a couple of Ukraine clips so we can catch up with that?
Oh, gee, I'm so happy about that. Since these will be a few of our last, because it's all coming to an end. One phone call and this thing is done in 24 hours. I'm ready. Let's close it out. Let's close out Ukraine. We're ready.
So I have two clips. And the only reason I want to play these at all, because I have climate clips too, which I'd rather play. But
that's important. We need to do climate clips too.
But there's a kicker here, so we have to play these. This is a Ukraine update.
This is MTD.
Russia on Wednesday launching its first missile attack on Kyiv since August.
That's according to Ukrainian officials, who say the attack involved strategic bombers and ballistic missiles.
Bombers.
Elderly women and small children taking shelter in an underground metro station.
The Kyiv region is always suffering. Kids can't go to school when drones are flying. And when there are missile attacks, we are seeking shelter.
The scale of the strikes and extent of any damage were not immediately clear. No casualties have been reported so far. And in D.C. on Wednesday, President-elect Trump met with President Biden. After the meeting, the White House suggested Trump should consider the Russia-Ukraine conflict to be one of the most serious global security threats as he returns to office.
You have an ongoing war of aggression by Russia against Ukraine, representing a larger threat to European security and therefore global security.
The White House also defended the aid it has sent to Ukraine, saying the U.S. also profits from it.
These aren't just dollars that we're picking up and shipping over to another country. They're dollars we're investing here in the United States in American jobs, producing American weapons that we send to Ukraine.
This comes as Secretary of State Antony Blinken was in Brussels on Wednesday to make sure Ukraine continues receiving aid from the U.S. Blinken says aiding Ukraine could have two possible outcomes.
Ensuring that Ukraine has the money, the munitions, and the mobilized forces to fight effectively in 2025, or to be able to negotiate a peace from a position of strength.
He added that the Biden administration will make sure to send all Ukraine aid allocated by Congress before January 20th.
All right, I have thoughts, but you have a kicker, so I don't want to spoil it in case my thoughts is the kicker.
Okay, play the click.
On Wednesday, Ukraine's prime minister announced that the country received a $1.3 billion grant from the U.S., saying that Ukraine will direct these funds toward essential humanitarian and social programs.
Now, okay, now they're getting, this is all loans, all benefits us, and then all of a sudden we give, a grant is free money.
I heard that the total amount that's still left is $8 billion. It's, you know, it's
they're going to have to dump it. They got to spend it.
And then the clip I wanted, which I didn't get, was Jake Sullivan saying, just to remind you, this is not going to Ukraine. This is going to our military contractors so they can make weapons for Ukraine.
Well, that was kind of indicated in the first clip.
Yes. All right. Okay. Well, that thing's ending. It's all about China. Let's go to climate change. I'm very excited about the.
Oh, this is about the new meetup.
Yes.
I thought we just ended a COP and then another one started right away.
Yeah. Well, we had the biodiversity. Diversite.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. I keep getting confused. I'm having too many of these meetings.
Yeah. Now we have. So that was COP 16 biodiversity COP. This is.
Different COP.
This is COP 29 in Baku.
Yes. Here we go.
An annual global climate conference is underway in Azerbaijan. The priority this year is money to help the places hit hardest by climate change. NPR's Michael Copley
reports. Due to climate change.
People all over the world face catastrophic threats from climate change. But the president of this year's United Nations meeting, Mukhtar Babayev, put the spotlight on developing countries.
Whether you see them or not, people are suffering in the shadows. They are dying in the dark. And they need more than compassion.
Hold on a second. Just for that alone, I'm giving you clip of the day. That's great. Clip of the day. The guy is a poet. He's a poet. They're dying
suffering in the dark. Dying in the dark. They're eating the dogs.
No, they're suffering in the shadows. They're dying in the dark.
This year's United Nations meeting, Mukhtar Babayev put the spotlight on developing countries.
Whether you see them or not, people are suffering in the shadows. They are dying in the dark, and they need more than compassion.
This guy is an alliteration nut job. Suffering in the shadows, dying in the dark.
Developing nations don't bear much responsibility for the climate pollution that's raising global temperatures.
Climate pollution.
But they're getting hit with some of the worst impacts, like more extreme heat waves and flooding from torrential rain.
Some
wealthy countries that built their economies using fossil fuels promised more than a decade ago to help their poorer neighbors pay to cut climate pollution and prepare for weather risks. Leaders at this year's climate talks are under pressure to come up with a new funding target that's a lot more ambitious than the last one, which was set at $100 billion a year.
These numbers may sound big, but they are nothing compared to cost of inaction.
But it's not clear where the money will come from.
Did he say coastal erection? What is going on here?
Coastal erections cost a lot.
may sound big, but they are nothing compared to cost of inaction.
But it's not clear where the money will come from. The UN said recently that developing countries need around $215 billion every year in this decade alone to adapt to climate impacts. That doesn't count the cost of cutting climate pollution or compensating developing countries for losses and damage they're already suffering.
No, brother. Okay.
That's so. It just gets worse. This is all about. It's all they talk about is money. And we have to. It's our money. Anyway, let's go.
Gaston Brown, the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda, called for wealthier nations to provide grants.
Barbuda?
Barbuda.
Where's Barbuda?
It's somewhere in the ocean. Barbuda. You've heard of it.
And Barbuda called for wealthier nations to provide grants, not loans, so that climate initiatives don't add more debt to poorer countries.
Wealthy polluting countries are seeking to shift responsibility onto elusive private capital instead of ensuring decisive government action to reduce and disincentivize emissions.
Wealthy governments say they can't pay for global climate efforts on their own, and that world leaders need to find ways to encourage more investment from the private sector. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said countries could raise more money by taxing polluting industries, like shipping, aviation, and fossil fuel production. And he said changes in organizations like the World Bank and International Monetary Fund could help funnel more private investment to developing countries.
The resources available may seem insufficient, but they can be multiplied with a meaningful change in how the multilateral system works. Big sums require big change.
So they're talking about $200 billion a year for all these different operations. Listen to this last little short clip.
Dozens of developing countries are calling for the new funding target to be set at more than $1 trillion a year. That's 10 times more than the previous commitment, which wealthy countries were slow to deliver in the first place.
They want $1 trillion a year.
Well, I can tell you why. Because there's a destination for this money. They didn't really talk about it, did they? They didn't really say what the money was for, except for coastal erections. However, I found a little ditty about this COP29, and I know what they're trying to do.
As COP29 continues in Azerbaijan's capital, Baku, the Middle Corridor is gaining attention. This key trade route offers a faster, more cost-effective alternative to traditional sea shipping.
Have you heard of the Middle Corridor?
Nope.
Okay.
The Middle Corridor is an important logistical project. It's a strategic bridge between Europe and Asia. This trade corridor will significantly benefit regional countries by enhancing trade and boosting economic growth.
The Middle Corridor.
Belt and Road?
Yes, the Middle Corridor is basically the train track from China to Europe.
Yeah, it's a Belt and Road
train. Yes.
It will also change the name of it?
This is the middle corridor of the Belt and Road. Stand by. Let's listen to the rest.
Economic growth. It will also foster greater connectivity, promote regional cooperation, and create new opportunities for investment and development.
But it's not just about global trade. With the aim of reducing carbon footprints and assessing the reduction of carbon emissions, the middle corridor is also central to the region's green transition. The main goal is to present the enterprise as environmentally friendly.
With its potential on green infrastructure and eco-friendly practices in Caucasus, the Middle Corridor is not just a trade route, it's a pathway for the future of sustainable global trade. Projects will be developed in cooperation between countries along the Middle Corridor, and they will be able to implement actions to reduce carbon emissions. COP29 is an important place for these talks.
So, this train track, which they say is more green than shipping, goes right through Kazakhstan. Two routes, in fact, through Kazakhstan, which is where this whole thing is being held. This is
what a scam.
A total scam. This is all about completing the Belt and Road trade route from China to Europe.
Yeah. So the Chinese can inundate Europe with Chinese product, cheaper Chinese products than they can make in Europe.
And guess where it enters Europe? Ukraine.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. One other interesting note about this was the delegation from,
the UN Climate Summit.
the annual event where the world comes together to wring their hands in despair, to give grand speeches and to achieve nothing of real value. We're talking about the COP Climate Summit. This year, it's the 29th edition, the COP29. It's being held in Azerbaijan. While the big nations are missing, there is one surprising inclusion. The Taliban are attending COP29. Azerbaijan gave them observer status. They're not a full-fledged delegation because the United Nations has not officially recognized this regime. But it seems like an attempt by Azerbaijan to legitimize the Taliban. And they're using the UN Climate Summit to do this, which discredits the summit even further. Not only is it a useless event, it is now also a vehicle to normalize ties with the Taliban. This year's climate summit will be remembered for this, for allowing the Taliban.
It's a terrorist summit now. The Taliban is at the COP29. Explain that to me.
I have no explanation. I mean, no one's going to give them money.
Meanwhile,
well, maybe unless they want to route the train to route through their Afghanistan.
Could be. That would be a different route. Meanwhile, NPR just sits here at home and terrorizes our children and grandchildren about climate change.
A new study shows many young people report feeling anxious about climate change. As Rebecca Rettelmeyer with member station WSKG reports, some universities are working to help students deal with the realities of the data.
The reality.
Over 50% of youth in
the realities of the data, John. Listen to NPR, shameful.
With the realities of the data.
Over 50% of youth in the United States are very or extremely worried about climate change. That's according to a recent study published in the scientific journal The Lancet. But there are ways to help young people cope, says
drugs.
Cornell University professor
drugs,
Michael Hoffman.
Exactly.
I think it's so important when we do talk about climate change to provide solutions, the answers. What can I do?
Hoffman is one of several professors around
Stop
the country
talking about it.
Reframing how he teaches climate change to put solutions and emotions at the center. He says his goal is to remind students there is hope. For NPR News, I'm Rebecca Rettelmeyer in Ithaca, New York.
Don't worry, kids, there's hope. Vote for Trump.
Due to climate change.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
you see, we've seen this for years and years. These poor, hapless preteens crying about the end of the globe and all the rest of it. And
yeah,
nothing changes, really. Meanwhile, we're getting snowstorms in England prematurely this year, as far as I can tell.
Don't tell anybody. I have two final clips for today's program. And they are about AI. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, well, you took up the gauntlet that I dropped last show.
I am ready to... we're going to have to start calling it. The articles are coming out. Bloomberg is talking about it. Everybody's talking about AI's data plateau.
Despite efforts to throw more computing chips, more data, and more energy at training these large language models, improvements have leveled off.
Some experts now say they've even run out of accessible data on the internet to train these AI. And now, as our tech correspondent Anna Tong reports, the possible solution could be an opportunity to reshuffle the industry's biggest players.
Hold on a second. Is that guy doing the announcing right there? Is he some character from The Simpsons?
It's Reuters. They're boring.
Terrible people.
I'm sorry. They're just boring.
The possible solution could be an opportunity to reshuffle the industry's biggest players. So, Anna, how are AI companies trying to get past this plateau?
Until now, all the focus has been on the AI companies are taking these vast amounts of data, and they're using the AI chips to crunch the data to train these models. And now what's happening is that companies are shifting focus to making the model better when it's actually being used, as opposed to when it's learning on the vast amount of data. So if you use ChatGPT now, what you'll notice is that when you're asking it a question, it's just basically trying to predict the next word, and whichever word they think is most statistically likely to be, it'll just spit it out at you. In this new world, they are basically coming up with a bunch of responses, and then it's using some sort of reasoning technique to then pick which path to go down. So the new models are actually much, much slower. And that's because they have to kind of consider all the potential answers before they go down a path.
doesn't sound very promising. There's no more human data to train the models with. It's slowing down. This is not good.
So does this new approach address some of those challenges around energy use, data needs, chip manufacturing, etc.?
Yeah, so I think it's unclear how this actually changes energy usage, because in this new paradigm, we're not spending as much energy on the pre-training phase, but we're spending a lot more energy on the inference phase. So it may turn out we're just using the same amount of compute power or even more. What I do think it definitely has an impact on is the types of chips that will be in demand. So NVIDIA is now the world's most valuable company, and that is thanks to just the insatiable demand that AI companies have for their chips. However, with this new paradigm in inference, you can use a lot of more different types of chips, and they can be widely distributed around the world, which opens up the door to a lot more competitors to NVIDIA.
Uh-oh. More competitors to NVIDIA.
Well, unless she names names, I'm not sure what she's talking about.
One of my buddies had a company show up at his door at his ranch and said, "We want to buy your ranch. Name your price." He likes his ranch. He didn't really want to get rid of his ranch. But his ranch is right near a huge transformer with gobs and gobs of power. And this is a company that builds data centers and then flips them right away.
Ooh, a data center flipping company.
Yeah. I said, sell quick. Sell it. Sell it.
If you name your price kind of thing.
Yeah, then you can buy it back for pennies on the dollar later.
Probably.
Now, I was just sent this clip from episode 441 of the No Agenda Show. This is from 2012. You might have to contextualize it for us just so we understand what you actually meant.
What do we need to do?
To fix
it. Yeah, we need to pump in about $10 trillion of phony baloney printed money into the system, and probably another 10 in about two or three more years. And then we're still going to have an economic collapse in 2017. Okay. But that's what we need to do. We need to print more money. I'm telling you, I'm the only guy on the block saying this, but I am, and there's other economists who will say it. I'm with Bernanke. Print more money. And it's like, it's not causing inflation. But let me ask, have this out of control. But
I think you said it.
Yeah, I was being facetious as hell.
Oh, I took it as truth. Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know what I was saying. So I heard it wrong. I didn't know the comedic stylings of you yet. It was 2012. It was early.
Yes, well, you won't find any other examples. No. Find something newer. Jeez.
I was very clear.
This is the problem with sarcasm. I've always thought that Tucker Carlson, that was sarcastic, by the way. It was like Tucker Carlson says so much sarcastic material that if you take it out of context, like somebody just did.
Then you don't know.
You sound like an idiot.
Well, I'm not trying to make you sound like an idiot.
I'm not talking. I'm not saying you did.
I'm just saying that's how
the sarcasm works. Mm. If you use it too much.
Yes.
You end up getting burned by it.
Well, let this be a lesson. We have to stop with the sarcasm. In the last decade or so,
I have been a big proponent of being careful about sarcasm because people will use it like that.
And that's a good point. That's a good point. All right, then let's just do one final one just to lighten the mood, and then we can thank some people.
Mattel may be hoping for a little magic this week to help make a packaging problem go away. The toy company apologizing for a misprint on packages of its collection of dolls for the upcoming Wicked film. The dolls' packaging was supposed to show the URL of wickedmovie.com, which would take customers to a website dedicated to the upcoming feature film based on the hit Broadway musical. But instead, a misprint led the packaging to show a similar yet incorrect URL for an adult film website, leading to customers posting about the typo on social media.
You know, this is not a misprint. We know exactly how this went. It should have been wickedmovie.com. They just put on the packaging wicked.com.
And by the way, all the reports, what you just said, all the reports, none of them will mention the name of the miss, quote unquote, misprinted
website.
It is wicked.com.
And as far as I can tell, it's not like a typical porn site. You can buy basically lesbian movies of girls who are not really lesbians, because let's be honest, they don't look like that. But this is
I did not check out the site, but I'm glad you did.
Yeah, no, I got to take a look at this. I'm like, oh, this is not porn. This is just like, you know, they got covers that could be in your video store. If any, I mean, this is so typical corporate. Like, everyone went, oh yeah, this is good. Yeah, Wicked is great. And everyone assumed that they had the URL. And they just all went forward with it, and no one bothered to check.
No one did any copy editing.
Well, but then to say,
and the most people are fact checking. Nobody does that anymore. Fact checking is dead.
I'm going to show my support by donating to No Agenda. Imagine all the people who could do that. Oh yeah, that'd be fab. Yeah, on No Agenda.
Fact checking may be dead, but our producers are still alive. Oh, what a bridge. What a segue.
Oh, you're just spiking the ball there. You could have stopped.
It was so bad. I had to spike it to distract from the horrible segue I made. Yes, our producers, $50 and above, we'd love to thank them for their contribution to the show. And remember, we have John's tip of the day coming up. And by the way, for Sunday, I have a tip. I have a tip for Sunday. I want to do the Sunday tip. Or we can both do a tip, but I think I have a good tip.
I don't care.
Well, I know you don't care, but maybe you should be. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, that's nice. That's a, you know, double tip Sunday.
There you go. Put it in the newsletter. Double tip Sunday, everybody. Not just the tip, a double tip. We got some meetups. We have some doctors to congratulate, and John will take us through the 50s.
Yeah, starting with Craig Hoy. Hoy. What a great name. He's in Pacifica, California, $133.33. Sir Ever of the Watt in Linwood, Michigan, $123.45. Siska Bram in Ada. In Holland, $101.70. Vert. It's got to be Vert. In Batavia, New York, 100. Oh, yes, send a note. You want to take a look at that note and see if there's anything in there we should read?
Yeah, let me take a look what Wirt said. Wirt said, that's Sir Short for Nothing, by the way. John and Adam, thank you for what you... This is a nice little piece of paper he's got here. Thank you for what you do and for reading the note of the Vietnam vet passing my brotherhood is quickly... leaving around me. Please give all my Vietnam vets karma.
My brotherhood is quickly. Yeah,
oh, leaving. His brotherhood. Oh, yes, of course. Where is our good old sergeant, by the way?
I don't know.
He's probably still around, I hope. Please change my knight name from Sir Diet to Short for Nothing. The treasure is just because. Thank you, brother. Sir Short for Nothing.
Kevin McLaughlin's up. 8008. And it's a boob donation. He's the Archduke of Luna, lover of America and boobs. Joe Beam, I guess, in Leiden. How do you pronounce that? This is Dutch. This is a Dutch guy. He's in Leiden. He's in Holland.
His name is, well, that's not a Dutch name. it says Sobim. He has a pronunciation guide there.
I didn't see that. Oh, okay.
And he wants a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
He came in at 8002. He says he's been listening since that 70s podcast. That's you, I think.
I've never done that 70s podcast.
Christopher Myers in Dallas, Texas, 75. Weston Wagner. He's in Fairbanks, Alaska. 6969. He wants some car sales karma. We'll give him that at the end. Tim Carolla in Manassas, Virginia, 6813. That's a birthday donation for his dad, Tim Sr., and himself, Tim Jr. They listen a lot. Jim Cleary in Paradise, California, 6006. Anonymous, 850, 60. then he needs the de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Christopher Dechter, 5878. Richard Dominelli in Dover, New Hampshire, 5272. That's a happy birthday call to Lydia. Baron Anonymous Cop in Redwood City. There he is, 5050. And now we have the $50 donors, name and location. Very short list today. We didn't get a lot of attention. Mike Moon starts us off in Athens, Georgia. With 50. Andrew Grasso in Mineola, New York. Tom Del Vecchio in Blandin, Pennsylvania. Stephen Ng in Box Elder, South Dakota. Gary Mao in Woodland Hills, California. Andrew St. Clair in Salem, Oregon. Dame Patricia Worthington in Miami. Jared Yaw in Nashville, Tennessee. Brandon Savoy in Port Orchard, Washington. Kevin Dills in Huntersville, North Carolina. Christian Freeman in San Marcos, Texas. And last on our list is Diane Schwanebeck in Johnsburg, Illinois. I want to thank these folks for making the show, whatever it is, 1712, the reality that it became. Oh, by the way, Andrew St. Clair in Salem, Oregon needed a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Taken care of. Thank you all very much for supporting the No Agenda Show, episode 1712. NoAgendaDonations.com is where you can go. Make a contribution. We don't read anything under 50, so thank you. Those $49.99, that's, of course, for reasons of anonymity. Although sometimes the anonymous spooks just come in and say, I'm an anonymous spook. There you go. There you go. Just take it
from
me.
Not enough of them. We didn't get any anonymous spooks there. Well, yeah, one government guy.
Yeah, one government guy. We just presume he's a spook. Also, thank you for the sustaining donations. Any amount, any frequency, you can do it all at noagendadonations.com. Here's the karma as requested. Thank you so much.
You've got karma.
Noagendadonations.com. A short list for that as well, but Tim Jr. wishes his dad, Tim Sr., a happy birthday. He turned 64 on November 10th. Sir Craig Allen celebrated on the 14th. That is today. Happy birthday, Sir Craig. Sir Stewart turning 60 on November 26th. And Richard Dominelli says happy birthday to Dame Lydia Terry. Congratulations from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe. And we do have two title changes. Sir Stewart now becomes Sir Stewart, the angry accountant, Baron of Milford. I'll read parts of his note in a moment. And Sir Craig Allen becomes Baronet Sir Craig Allen. Thank you both for your support and your upage on the peerage ladder of the No Agenda Show. There it is. It's just, what is it again? Just the regular old seltzer?
Which Polar one? Seltzer.
Polar Seltzer. Time to welcome our doctors of education in climate change studies. Thank you very much for attending our No Agenda courses. You have done quite well, and we are very proud to hand out Doctors of Education to Rick Bunch and Sir Craig Allen. Yes, Doctors of Education of the No Agenda Studies of Climate Change. Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I'm feeling better about it. I'm feeling better about it. So Sir Stewart had a make good. And he said, greetings from England to celebrate my upcoming 60th birthday on the 26th of November and the 25 years of marriage to my wonderful wife, Michelle, on the 27th of November. I would like to apply to become a doctor of education and have donated the appropriate fee of $1,000 plus fees to enable the application to go smoothly, subject to your kind approval. I would also like to thank you for giving me a wonderful dose of Jobs Trump karma when I was awarded a Commodore certificate for show 1700. This has resulted in me being offered a wonderful new education role, which the doctor will be very helpful in boosting my academic credentials. And for my daughter, Lucy has now finally secured an excellent part-time role to build her CV and work experience after months of NOAA disappointment. NOAA Agenda Jobs Karma clearly is the most powerful force in the universe. And he also gives us credit for helping get President Trump elected. Well, I don't know about that.
Call us.
Thank you very much.
It wasn't for us.
Then we have a layaway and night note from Rick Fornival. He says, I have procrastinated writing to claim my knighthood status for some time. I've been on the $4 a week value for value program going back to 2016. and I will reach baronet status on Christmas Day 2025. I was going to wait until then to collect my dual status, but during the last program, a segment was presented that merits attention. During the show, you played a clip of Nigel Farage singing the praises of the No Agenda Show, yourself and His Eminence John C. Dvorak. While hearing the clip, my thoughts went to, isn't this cool? Nigel is a fan of the show. You then immediately gave proper notice that this was a paid endorsement. I was pretty much gobsmacked. This was an incredibly clear lesson that is more likely than not how most endorsements go. At 67, I'm no spring chicken. To find myself in this situation was, to say the least, jarring. Well, thank you for bringing this up, Rick. And some other people have decided to give money to celebrities to promote No Agenda. Please don't do that anymore. Support the show, not celebrities. This is, you know, it was funny when it was Nigel Farage, and we appreciate people trying to do something nice, but we think it would be better spent on us. This is where you agree.
Yeah, we have bills to pay.
Yes. So even though it's...
I'm reminded of the bricks.
but the bricks, the money still went to Leo, didn't it?
Yeah, the people gave Leo money, and then they put up a brick that said No Agenda Show on the old brick.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The brick house.
Yeah, that was no good.
And where did those bricks end up? Because he had to move.
Yeah, they trashed them. It's gone. It's no good. Yeah, that's a very good point. You are right.
We don't need No Agenda bricks.
That sword is for our two knights. I need a sword from you so we can bring them up on the podium for the round table. Hello, Rick Munch and Rick Furnival. That's right. Both of you support the No Agenda Show in the amount of $1,000 or more. And I am very proud to pronounce thee as Sir Ricky Bobby of the Land of Many Wives and Sir Rick of the Northern Piedmont. Thank you so much for supporting your No Agenda Show. For you, gentlemen, hookers and blow, we've got prostitutes and cigars, rent boys and Chardonnay. Along with that, if that's not your style, some harlots and Haldol, or redheads and rye, organic macaroni and plasticizers. Ooh, yummy. Geishas and sake, vodka, vanilla, bong hits and bourbon, sparkling cider and escorts, ginger ale and gerbils, breast milk and pablum, and as always at the round table, mutton and mead right there ready for you. And while you're munching on it, while you're enjoying a fine cigar with your prostitute, go to noagendarings.com. That's where you can... Sorry, I mean...
Hey, babe.
Let my cigar... Go to noagendarings.com. You'll see the handsome knight ring there. And it's also, we have for dames as well, of course. And it's a signet ring, so you can hit someone in the mouth, leave a lasting impression, or you can use the wax that we provide for you to seal your important correspondence. We love getting those in the P.O. box. It's always fun to crack open a wax seal. And it comes with a certificate of authenticity. Noagendarings.com is also for your doctorates if you want us to get the right name on it. So you can proudly display that in your office. At your university job, and give us an address to send it as well. Thank you so much, everybody, for supporting the best podcast in the universe.
No Agenda Meetups.
A lot of meetups this month, all the way up through the new year. No reports today. I did receive a report, but someone like copy pasted a Word document into the email. And that, I mean, it just, that becomes unreadable. Have you ever seen that happen where someone copy pastes a Word doc and it just gets all these control characters? You ever seen that?
I don't know that people that know what they're doing ever do that.
Well, it happened twice, sent the same record. So I could not read.
And don't do it.
It was even weirder. And I said,
saving this plain, you said it. I heard that.
Yes. When I did reply, my email program couldn't even find the reply to address. It just had an empty field. It was the oddest thing.
And maybe it was a spam.
No. It said like meetup report. Anyway, today
from
there
the
is
meetup a, report spam.
Yeah, the Central Colorado Election Hangover Meetup is at 6 o'clock. Man, are you guys still drinking? At O'Malley's Pub, Palmer Lake, Colorado, on Saturday, the Dallas-Fort Worth Mid-Cities Meetup. That's 11:30 in the morning. Sir Nerdworks is organizing the Bourbon Street Bar and Grill in Bedford, Texas. Also on Saturday, the Shrunken Amygdala Support Group meets at 2 o'clock at Taft's Brewporium in Cincinnati, Ohio. The Treasure Valley Meetup, 3 o'clock on Saturday at Heritage Social Club in Garden City, Idaho. The Texas Hill Country Post-Election Freak-Off Happy Hour. Huh. 3:30. That's in Bernie. Huh.
Bernie.
That's right down the road. Pure country. Oh, man. I think we have something on Saturday. I'll check. The Feral Housewife organizing that one. All aboard. Flight of the No Agenda number 57. That's right. Leo Bravo organizing in Fullerton, California at the Santa Fe Cafe on Saturday. The Minnesota Wellness Check. Wellness Check 4:30 at O'Brien's Public House in Shakopee, Minnesota. Alexandria's Virginia new location meetup 5 o'clock. The Spooks meet at the Lost Dog Cafe in Alexandria, Virginia. And Sunday, our next show day, the Ocala Glass Bottom Boat Tour meetup. Hey, this is the Florida people, the Reiki Princess. These meetups are amazing. They're big. There's always a theme. You have to RSVP to get details. Go to noagendameetups.com. It's at 12:30, the Glass Boat Bottom Meetup. So I guess they've got a glass boat. And that's in Ocala, Florida. That should be a fun one.
They just have a glass boat bottom.
Well, that's possible. The Reiki Princess, though, she does the shoot-ups and all kinds of fun stuff. The Black Hills No Agenda Meetup in South Dakota, Spearfish to be exact, at Crow Peak Brewing, 3 o'clock on Sunday. Oh, my goodness, a lot. Two more. The Too Many Eggs, Keene, New Hampshire Meetup, 3:33 p.m. Mimi says, hey, that's great. Margaritas Keene, New Hampshire, Too Many Eggs meetup. And the Land of the Morning Calm meetup at 7 o'clock in Burger and Pasta in Korea, in Busan, Korea.
That would be great.
Mr. Taigu is organizing there. That. Imagine going to Korea and like, what are we going to do? Burger and pasta. Okay, that sounds perfect. Hey, send us a meetup report. We look forward to it there. Oh, November 21st. El Zante, El Salvador. We need meetup reports, people. These are good. Let me see. Do we have any other foreign places? Leiden in the Netherlands, December 12th. Saventum, the Netherlands. That's March.
Meetups are usually pretty popular.
Yes. So I'd love to hear from, I want to hear from all the meetups, of course. El Zante, El Salvador would be great. And Busan, Korea. Fantastic. NoAgendaMeetups.com is where you can find out all the information about these meetups, get details. And if you can't find a meetup near you, fret not, my friend. Just start one yourself. It's easy and always a party.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You wanna be where you won't be triggered or held to blame. You wanna be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
I don't know how this happened, but I have so many end of show ISOs. It's just not okay. It's not okay. But
you have one or two you think are super winners. You should just play those.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here we go.
Hello.
It's me.
No, it's not. That's not you.
Hello.
That's not you. That's Del Bigtree.
Sounds just like me.
It's Del Bigtree.
Hello.
And then we have this one, kind of bittersweet, this one.
That's all they got, folks.
It's kind of sad for Alex. We have...
Enjoy sponsor-free listening.
Or...
It's a totally new way to support what you love.
No, that's what I got.
I like the sponsor-free listening in that group.
I think sponsor-free is a possible contender, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Well, I have only have four.
Okay.
Including a rerun, which I'm going to keep playing until you pick it.
Okay.
Because you told me to.
Okay.
Start with dying.
They are dying in the dark.
Pretty good.
They're dying in the dark. That should be kept as an evergreen comment.
Yes, dying in the dark.
Is eating the dogs.
It's up there.
Then we have the evergreen Oy Vey.
Oy Vey, such a podcast.
Yeah.
That's by request.
Yes.
Run on good.
We've just been on a run of really good shows lately.
Who said that?
Somebody on NPR.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. And the last one?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think
they are dying in the dark.
dying in the dark is it, man. There's just no two ways about it. It's good.
All right, but
it's
you good. Have to keep that one around as an evergreen people yes. can request.
Dying in the dark.
And remember, they're eating the dogs.
And remember, on Sunday, we have a double tip of the day. But right now, it is time for the singular tip, John's tip of the day.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCD.
Okay, this is kind of an elitist tip.
Hold on.
But I want to get it
hold
out
on,
there.
Hold on. The jingle's still playing, man.
I step on. I like to bring it. I like to.
We couldn't hear you.
I like to. Oh, that's producer's fault.
Okay. All right.
This elitist tip.
Elitist tip. Oh.
I noticed, by the way, I went to Costco and they had a 95 right at the front, a 95 inch LCD, which is big.
Yeah.
For $1,400, and it was by that third-rate company, TCY or some crazy company, and they claimed to be OLED, but it was like faded. I didn't think much of it. The point I'm trying to make here is that if you're going to buy a flat-screen TV, consider an OLED by LG Electronics. I bought one of these a couple of years ago. The thing doesn't weigh but 3 pounds. It's 60 inches. It's got the screen is so thin, and it's bright, and it has 100% viewing angle. There is not one angle. It's not like an LCD where if you go off axis, it starts to kind of go away, and to the point where if you go way off axis, you can't see the screen. These have 100% viewing angle right to the edge.
Mm.
OLED from LG is and they're expensive. That's why it's elitist, but they're worth every penny. And they have HDR that's dynamite, which is the high.
And you use this to watch YouTube TV?
Yeah.
But is that an HD? Is it HDR YouTube TV?
Well, HDR is a high dynamic range.
Right. Does YouTube
and
output
so
that?
Not everybody will broadcast in high dynamic range, even when they do. Well, when they do 4K, they're kind of obliged to.
How about Pluto?
But not too many screens can handle the high dynamic range to the extent that these OLEDs do.
Does Pluto have a high dynamic range?
Not that I know of.
But I bet the over-the-air channels have some high dynamic range. There must be one or two high HDR over-the-air channels, no?
I haven't seen one yet.
So
I get my high dynamic range from either movies that are put on Netflix or there's a lot of stuff on YouTube TV that has high dynamic range, a lot of sporting events. It's a killer.
Oh, so you don't get any blurring. It looks good.
The blurring is more of a function of the resolution. The high dynamic range just gives you the depth of colors. It has the gamuts. It's bigger, and it's just a killer.
I love hearing you talk about this stuff. You used to do this a lot. I think even on what was the show we did at Mevio?
I did a bunch of shows on Mevio.
No, the one that you did, the one that we bought from those other guys.
Cranky Geeks.
Cranky Geeks. Yeah. You would talk about stuff like that. I miss that.
Oh.
It's not like that. I want John to talk about OLED TVs.
About HD TV.
And I want him to say so. OLED instead of OLED. Okay, so this is at Costco, this item?
Well, no, LG brand is everywhere. And the LG they have the regular LCD stuff, but they have their OLED screens. And look at this thickness of these things. Sony makes an OLED, and so does this other company. But the ones that have been doing nothing but these for a long time is LG Electronics. They're stunning sets. They're definitely worth the investment.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is John C. Dvorak's tip of the day. Go buy an LG.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCD.
And sometimes Adam.
Yes. On Sunday, we will have a double tip. I got a great one. I'm very excited to share this tip with you. I think you'll like it. You'll even want this tip. You're like, I got to get me some of that tip. I guarantee it. Which means you just need to tune in on Sunday. Don't worry. We'll remind you with a newsletter on Saturday. It's what we do. We are here to serve you, to keep you calm, to keep you cool, to keep you collected, and we've been predicting popes and presidents for a long time. No worries. Now, if you truly want us to keep going for four more years, support the show. Go to noagendadonations.com. And I'm going to go outside, sniff up a nice little dose of freedom that's in the air. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country, here in FEMA Region Number 6, Fredericksburg, Texas. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
Yeah, from Northern Silicon Valley, where it might actually be raining in a few minutes. I'm John C. Dvorak.
That's not rain, that's liquid freedom, John. Liquid freedom. That's what you got out there. Coming up next, we've got Dame DeLorean and Sir Spencer. I believe homegrown hits? No, it's homegrown hits. Well, they'll be talking about it, I guess. Remember us, noagendadonations.com. We'll talk to you on Sunday. Adios, mofos, ahooey, hooey, and such. Ow, that hurt.
Okay, so does this sound like you? You love No Agenda's podcast. You wish you could get more of your favorite show. And you want to support No Agenda's mission to create the best podcast in the universe. If all of that sounds appealing, then it's time to sign up for the No Agenda Plus bundle.
Just send your cash.
City's giddy because the mayhem's going mad. Me and BJT seems like the only ones with swagger. The mayhem's going mad. The mayhem's going mad. It's on Eric Adams and the mayhem's going mad. Democrats stab me in the back, cloak and dagger. Local attrition chains, even Alvin Bragg. I get hate across the state, Long Island to Niagara. Even DC be dissing me. See you, Kamala. Immigration investigations is getting bad, but Donald Trump is cleaning up this dumb Africa tabra. New York City's giddy cause the mayor's going mad. Me and DJT seems like the only ones with swag. The mayor's going mad. The mayor's going mad. It's on Eric Adams and the mayor's going mad. Make NYC great again, cause I'm a fit up, but I'm still the mayor.
Best podcast in the universe.
Adios, mofo.
Dvorak.org/NA.
They're dying in the dark.